Brother, mainstream media, government cover-ups. You want answers? Well, so does he. He's Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network. And now, live from Austin, Texas, Alex Jones.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome, and so thank you so much for joining us today. We're going to be live here for the next 4 hours. Again, thank you for joining us on this Thursday, the 12th day of November, 2009. G. Edward Griffin will be joining us to go over the Federal Reserve, the true nature of the collectivist New World Order, and after 45 years of fighting them, we're going to ask him, what is it like to see all of this now coming to fruition? There are no longer any more reasons for denial about what we're facing as a society. So a very informative interview with G. Edward Griffin coming up in the third hour today. We may even keep him into the fourth hour. We're going to have open phones as well here on the radio show. If you'd like to comment on gold being at record levels, at Lou Dobbs being driven out of CNN. If you would like to comment on the Fort Hood suspect is to be charged with murder, 13 charges of premeditated murder stemming from last week's shooting at Fort Hood Post in Texas. So, you know, I guess he's to be charged 1 week after the massacre. Speaking of this massacre and how it appears to be staged at some level, whether he was whacked out on Prozac or one of those serotonin reuptake inhibitors, whether he was a patsy, or whether he was a true Muslim extremist that the FBI and CIA knew was going to attack and allowed to do it. Any way you slice it, they're caught red-handed. That dovetails in with all of these mainstream news articles. I mean, there have been so many in the last week. I meant to cull a bunch of them this morning that I've seen. I've seen a pattern emerge in mainstream news where how the U.S. is funding the Taliban, Taliban and Al-Qaeda caught with U.S. arms, Taliban and Al-Qaeda released when Afghan army captures them, and the whole history of this. But just lately, it's all coming out. Just like it's coming out, mainstream news, that our government's growing the opium in Afghanistan and the cocaine in Colombia and only eradicating the minority growers, the FARC communist in Colombia, and some of the different Pashtun tribal leaders in Afghanistan. I mean, it's incredible how it can be an open secret that our criminal government brings most of the drugs in. It's an open secret they're setting up world government. It's an open secret they've bankrupted the economy by design and are bringing in a world government, a financial tyranny run by them. It's an open secret they're eugenicists that want to forcibly reduce world population. And still, the drumbeat marches on. Also, a New York hostage taker at a school was a disgruntled father of a vet. Gee, I wonder where he got the idea from that. I've seen several Hollywood movies where disgruntled fathers who can't get health care for their kids or whatever the case is, go take over schools and hospitals and hold kids hostage, and they're somehow heroes. I guarantee you, this TV head got the idea from that. It's disgusting. Another form of mind control. People watching the television set get influenced by it because they're so weak-minded. Look, there's just massive news coming up today. Stay with us. We'll be right back after this quick break. 1-800-259-9231. And we'll get you up and on the air.
He's the T-Rex of political talk. Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network.
1-800-259-9231 is the toll-free number to join us here today on this Thursday, the 12th day of November 2009. We are now into the second segment. Thank you so much for joining us. Paul Watson will be on in the second half of the next hour, joining us from England, PrisonPlanet.com editor, because I've seen a major pattern of mainstream media articles in the last few weeks admitting that the CIA is protecting with our military forces the opium fields, the poppy fields of Afghanistan, where upwards of 90%, I kept saying 80% of world opium was produced there, but I guess that was a number from a few years ago. I looked it up last night, and they're saying it's estimated 90 to 92%. The point is, most of the opium gets grown in Afghanistan. The climate is just perfect for it. That's where many types of poppies that have the opiates in them are indigenous. And the Taliban, a true faction of Taliban that was not CIA controlled, took over Afghanistan. Remember, the Taliban and Al-Qaeda were created in the late 1970s by Zbigniew Brzezinski, national security advisor to Jimmy Carter. How do we know this? He wrote two books about it bragging. I mean, we already knew this, but now he admits it. He's written a couple books the last few years. And he brags and says, look, we had the Muslim extremist attack the Russian embassies, attack the Russian puppet government. The remnant of it is that what we know as the Northern Alliance. They're communist, basically. And you know them because they have the short beards and the regular Taliban have the long beards. I mean, it's literally that obvious there in Afghanistan. And, of course, you have the Pashtuns that make up a lot of the Taliban, and there's different subgroups of the Pashtuns, and there's several other groups, and they're always constantly killing each other. That's why no one can conquer Afghanistan, because they're a bunch of hillbillies. And I'm a little bit of a hillbilly. I'm not knocking them for that. They're a bunch of hillbillies that have been killing each other for thousands of years, and they're never going to stop killing each other. And if you get in the middle of them killing each other and fighting with each other, it's a warrior society. It's like the Native Americans. They were constantly attacking their neighboring tribes and constantly taking over different areas. That's why they were so easy to beat, was because you could buy one Native tribe off and leverage them against the next tribe you wanted to take over. In fact, the Natives would come to the Westerners, to the French and British and German and Dutch and Spanish settlers, and say, hey, we want you to come attack our neighbor and share their land with us. The difference with the Afghans is they have modern weapons, and there are not as many factions in Afghanistan as there are here, as there were in North America. Into Central and South America, it was the same story. Literally hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of different tribes that were all very different in many respects. I don't want to get into anthropology here. I don't claim to be an expert on it, even a lay expert, but I've studied it quite a bit and how that was used against them. But with the Afghans, they are Muslims. And whereas they do like to kill each other, they particularly like to kill the Greeks when they invaded. Over 2,000 years ago. They like to kill the Persians when they invaded. That's the Iranians today. They like to kill the British when they invade. They like to kill Pakistanis when they invade. They like to kill Indians when they invade. They like to kill the Chinese when they've invaded. They like to kill the Russians when they invade. You come there and you occupy their country and start bossing them around, they don't care if you kill them. They're going to try to kill you. It's very hard to beat somebody like that. I mean, the British tried to defeat the colonists who had been British subjects, but once they decided they were going to fight and weren't going to stop, didn't matter if the war lasted 7 years, didn't matter if the colonies lost almost every battle, more than 9 out of 10. I mean, they lost, I haven't done the math, but there was only a few major battles that they won, starting at Trenton, New Jersey. I mean, you can count the victories on one hand, but they persevered. You cannot beat them. You'd have to kill every single Afghan in the country. You know, the Romans had trouble a few times with different groups they couldn't conquer. And when they finally conquered them, they would just kill everyone. Orders were given in certain cities, in the case of Carthage, just to kill everybody. Don't even take their women and children as slaves and salt the earth so they can't grow crops. Okay, now I'm going off into history lessons and it's giving me a headache. It may be giving you a headache, so I'm going to move away from that. Middle of the next hour, we're going to look at all these mainstream news articles with headlines like Taliban caught with U.S. arms. Taliban protected by U.S. Coalition forces protect some Taliban. Taliban flown out to safety. I mean, there's been a lot of new articles, but I want Watson to go over some of the older ones out of the Times of London and other places, MSNBC, where 6,000 Taliban and Al-Qaeda cream, the commanders were taken out of the country, and then all these special forces commanders, a colonel, wrote an article for the San Francisco Chronicle and said, look, I don't know what's going on, but we capture these people, including Taliban generals, and we're ordered to give them money and let them go, and we're reprimanded. Something isn't right. And Pat Tillman started writing letters home to Mama and to other people talking about this, and they murdered him so fast because they can ignore some colonel. They weren't going to ignore that football star coming home and going, look, we're protecting the opium. Because Pat Tillman wasn't stupid. He saw 9/11. He got angry. This office has talked to his brother, and then his brother said he would come on, call him in a few months. We called. The number was changed. I'd like to get Pat Tillman's brother on. I'd like to get his mother, his father on, because that's a big story right there, that the letters he was sending home, how he was going to come home and be anti-war. He was starting to question 9/11. He was questioning the opium, because right when Pat Tillman got there, what, a year and a half after the invasion or so? That was when the cultivation of poppies exploded and U.S. troops were ordered to guard it. And I mean, he wasn't stupid. He's like, well, what? I'm guarding opium? I'm going to come home and talk about this. And the boys upstairs said, well, he was useful to us before. Not anymore. Make it look like an accident. We'll tell his mama he was a hero. Send him home in a pine box. The more I think about Afghanistan, if we can just educate people about this. By the way, U.S. forces have had incredible victories in Afghanistan. The whole thing has been an absolute total success. From their true perspective, from their true agenda. Not the one you're told about democracy and freedom and women getting to vote. Actually, women could vote. They were 60% of college graduates, including doctors and lawyers in Iraq. They had rock and roll music on the radio there. Playboy was sold in stores. I'm not necessarily saying that's a sign of a good culture, but certainly a free culture, comparatively. And then now the women wear burqas, and they keep their mouths shut, and they're basically slaves in Iraq. Our government has put an Islamicist regime in. What do you think they do? What do you think happened in 1953 in Iran? They had a poet laureate who was secular, an anti-Muslim extremist, an anti-Muslim brotherhood, who was also anti-Soviet, but he trolled Anglo-American Oil and BP, his name was Mohammad Mossadegh, that, you know what, we're going to keep a little bit of our own money here from the oil. And they said, you know what, meet the mullahs. And they gave him a bunch of automatic weapons and overthrew the country. Look, get one thing straight for all of you that have phobias out there of the Muslim extremists running around. Those guys work for the New World Order, period. You would have to be an ignorant moron to not know that. If you go do any research, it is an absolute open secret, not debatable. You got that? I hope that's clear. But the problem is these guys got so extreme in the late 90s that they actually said, you know what, we don't want opium anymore, and we're not going to let anybody grow opium. And opium supplies dried up. And last number I saw, it was 12 times what it was under the Taliban in 2001. The amount of opium. It's a world record. It's many times the record. The number I saw was twice the previous record before that from the peak back in the 70s. The point is that they are just flooding our society with it. And so there were different factions of the Taliban. But those are the factions that then went to the U.S. government and said, Osama bin Laden isn't here. And if you can show us evidence he did it, we'll try to find him and deliver him to you. Those are the only people, the unofficial ambassador to the U.N. and to the U.S. from Afghanistan, the religious clerics, those are the guys they arrested. The real Taliban, the real al-Qaeda, whenever our troops would capture them, they just put their hands up, they'd get loaded on C-130s, CIA would walk in and say, fly them into Pakistan, and here's a giant chest of gold. I mean, this actually came out in the news. Oh, you caught the number one Taliban commander. Here's a chest of gold. Thank you, sir. And the special forces commanders are like, what are you doing? You take your orders from me. Stand down. Release them. That's how this country works, okay? That's who runs this country. And their C-130s and jets are crashing every year. We see another report of them crashing in the U.S. or Mexico or Asia, filled with heroin, filled with cocaine, filled with child sex slaves. And it's in the news, a tiny blurb, and no one gets in trouble. This is your government, an absolute group of murdering criminals, period. And you've got it compartmentalized where the good FBI, the good police, the good military, they don't know what's going on. Now, there are those that are in the compartmentalized system close to the corruption, and they wake up and start speaking out. They get fired, they get court-martialed, or they get bullets pumped into their heads. We'll be right back. I didn't mean to go into a rant about the banks that control the CIA, the FBI, our military, growing the opium in Afghanistan and the cocaine, controlling the production centers in Colombia. It just really shakes me up to know it can be in the New York Times that Mohammad Karzai's brothers, the main opium kingpin in Afghanistan, and he's on the CIA payroll, and it's just admitted that they're growing the opium. And they admit it in a sideways way, kind of like you might pass gas in church or something. And I mean, it's done just where you hope nobody notices, but they still, I hate to use a gross analogy, but that's what it's like. They just kind of let it out and just throw it on the table so it loses its power. I mean, if it was broken as a big investigative report, CIA controlling most of the opium supply, bringing in the U.S., Congress calls for decriminalization, the hypocrisy must end. No, it's just buried in mainstream articles. And I keep telling the story of 3 or 4 months ago. We need to go into the BBC archives because everything is archived on the BBC. And it was a report on BBC. I was listening on Sirius. I've gotten my car, almost ran off the road. And I'm sorry if you've heard the story 10 times. It's just too important. Maybe a listener can dig that out and put it on YouTube or something. Send it to us. I'm trying to hire some more people to do research up here so I can point things out and then go find it. But it was a report on Afghanistan, and they just sideways admitted that the CIA and the Pentagon were growing the opium poppies. And the report basically stated, it's a delicate balancing act, but of course the British accent, a delicate balancing act with the Taliban, because if they don't work with the Taliban and allow them to grow the opium, they lose the money they need for schools and mosque. And because there's not a lot of funding for rebuilding, this is the only major cash crop in Afghanistan, so to take away their age-old product would hurt their culture. And if they eradicated it, it would give more power to Taliban factions that are opposing the coalition forces. That's why the military is protecting the poppies. And that's why it's at record production levels. We talked to Colonel Blah Blah. And then they just admit it. I mean, I can't deal with this. That when you have a cable man or the phone lady or the meter reader or people putting carpet in your house, or whatever it is, they're spying on you, looking for marijuana, looking for heroin, looking for cocaine. And meanwhile, most of the cocaine and heroin is brought in by government-affiliated crime syndicates. The only thing we can do to stop this immediately is just do not use drugs. And by drugs, I mean hard drugs. I'm not up here judging people, but don't use heroin. Extremely destructive. Don't use any opiates. Don't use painkillers. Don't use methamphetamine. Don't use cocaine, but especially cocaine and heroin, because when you buy that, that is a tax going directly to the central banks who've been caught repeatedly laundering the money. And then meanwhile, the very same banks own and finance the big pharma companies that are openly pushing Ritalin, Prozac, and other drugs that are just as dangerous or more dangerous than heroin and cocaine and their molecular structure on the school kids. I mean, of course, what do you expect from a drug-dealing government? They bring in the illegal drugs, keep them illegal, to have a monopoly and jack up the price. They have a monopoly on the legal drugs through their patents, so they charge exorbitant amounts of money for those. Skull and Bones was founded by the opium trade. That's mainline ABC News. Skull and Bones founded the entire CIA. Even Robert De Niro's The Good Shepherd, which is very accurate historically, it admits it all with Matt Damon. What does it admit? The drug dealers are the Skull and Bones. They set up the CIA. And by the way, they devil worship. It's all in the movie. Mainstream movie hailed as a historical masterpiece. Absolutely accurate. Devil worshiping, drug dealing. I mean, who are these people? They're devil worshipers. It's a big joke to them. And they use your fake morals to enslave you. All you fools that are for drug criminalization. But why do they really target marijuana? Because it's not a deadly drug. I don't think it's good in many respects. It has a lot of good attributes and some bad. I think it's abused. It gets stronger and stronger all the time. It's actually in the hallucinogen class. I mean, I smoked pot some in high school and a few times in college, and I didn't like it because it's heavy-duty stuff, folks. So I'm not some... You know, I get attacked by the pro-pot people because I bash pot and say it's not perfect. And then I get attacked by the anti-pot people. Look, just grow up, folks. The reason they go after marijuana is because anybody can grow it and the globalists don't control it. I'm going to your phone calls. Then, when we start the next hour, I'm going to break down a ton of really important news that I have here in front of me in my stack, including Lou Dobbs leaving CNN. We're going to play his farewell swan song. He's been there since 1980, a founding news anchor, and he has been driven out of CNN, and there's a huge celebration by Geraldo Rivera and others saying that he's a racist, all because Lou Dobbs talked about the fact that our border's wide open and that NAFTA and GATT and the North American Union and the SPP are destroying our jobs, and that many of the groups like La Raza and Mecha, La Raza's slogan is, for those inside the race, everything. For those outside the race, nothing. And see, Lou Dobbs, whose wife's Hispanic, he's from South Texas, he's just like me. I don't like black racist. I don't like white racist. I don't like Hispanic racist. I don't like Asian racist. And there's nothing more hypocritical than the left, who uses racism, uses minority, which in many cases are now the majority, racism against white people as a political tool. I'm sick of it, and so is Lou Dobbs. And his house got shot up. He has to have bodyguards. He's getting death threats. That's how the Mexican mafia operates. I mean, they've hand grenaded and shot reporters and FBI agents and police in New Mexico, Arizona, Southern California, and South Texas. These people mean business. And they're killing and bombing and threatening and attacking reporters that expose drug cartels. Not just Lou Dobbs, who comes out and mildly criticizes Mecha and La Raza and others. And folks, I've been to Mecha and La Raza meetings and rallies at the Texas Capitol. I mean, they're openly chanting for those in the race, everything, for those outside the race, nothing. La Raza means the race. Raza means race. And, you know, I've gone and protested the Ku Klux Klan more than 10 times. You know, there's videos on YouTube. You can just Google Alex Jones protest the Klan for over a decade. And I've gone out and I've bullhorned La Raza and Mecha. And maybe I need to do it some more because I'm not a hypocrite, ladies and gentlemen. And they're just as bad. And I'm sick of it. I'm sick of injustice. I'm sick of hypocrisy. And I'm tired of it. And I'm not putting up with it anymore. And I'm not putting up with Lou Dobbs' house getting shot up, and you shouldn't either. So they've driven him out of CNN, bought out his contract. The only good show they had on CNN, and it wasn't perfect. Lou Dobbs certainly isn't perfect. He's been on the show before. By the way, let's try to get Lou Dobbs back on. That's a good idea. Oh, boy. All right, let's just go ahead and go to your calls now, or I'll never get to them. Dan in Missouri, you're on the air. Or is it Montana? Dan, you're on the air.
Yes, this is Danny, and I live in the Kansas City, Missouri area. And I'm a former director on a small fire department known as Blue Summit that lies between Kansas City and Independence. Now, I'd like to kind of get the thought of where I'm going with this story here. We have to where if we don't have our first responders, when the shit hits the fan.
All right, I got to let you go. Okay, buddy. Let's go ahead and talk to Linda in Canada. Linda, you're on the air.
Hey, Alex. I'm calling from Ontario, Canada.
Welcome.
We've been listening to your show for the past year and a half. And all the things you've been saying regarding that H1N1 and all these things, now they've come to fruition here in Canada with this vaccination. It's been about the last 2-3 weeks, people have been lining up for this vaccination. And there's all kinds of information saying the pregnant women can get adjuvanted, they can't, now it's okay for them to get the non-adjuvanted. And we haven't gotten the vaccinations, but I'm just worried about my children. That there is nobody really here like you saying anything about these things and vaccinations. And I know here in grade 7, they have to get 2 hepatitis B shots plus a meningitis C shot.
Well, ma'am, let me be clear with you, Linda. I don't know how long you've been listening, but in England, in Canada, in Australia, it's all the same system as the U.S. No one has to take the shots. The only place they tried to make it law was in New York State and Massachusetts State. And in New York, it's already been beaten in court. It's already being defeated in Massachusetts. So how can they tell people all over the U.S. it's the law they have to take shots when the only places they've tried to make it mandatory, it's been defeated? New Jersey's trying to make it mandatory. They lie to you, which is an even bigger crime. They're not only trying to inject you with something that's dangerous, they lie to you and tell you that you have to take the shots, but they have waivers for the shots. There is no law. It is the school policy that they take these injections, but they prey on people's ignorance of the facts to push this on you. And a big wake-up call for a lot of parents in Canada, England, and the U.S. is they'll go into the school and say, you can't make my child take shots. And they say, yes, you do have to. And then if you demand the waiver form, they will angrily give it to you, and you will know that they were trying to lie to you and manipulate you. So just to be clear, ma'am, in Canada, I've seen the laws, you do not have to take any of the shots. In fact, you can pull up mainstream articles in the Canadian press, all over your big papers in the last month, where your own government recommended that people not take the regular seasonal flu shot if they were going to take the H1N1 shot. Because the regular flu shot, government study shows, doubles your chances for some reason of getting the H1N1. So let's just get that clear, Linda. Your children don't have to take the shot if you don't want them to. They're lying to you, Linda.
there any shots that are safe? Because now they were just giving the Gardasil vaccination, and I refused that shot. And she was, like, basically the only one in the whole class that didn't get the shot. And
so to be clear, they're saying in the school, is it a public school?
Yes.
That's how they do it here. I mean, have you seen the reports in England, Australia, and the U.S. where they just give elementary students the shot without asking their parents, or even if the parents say no, they still line them up and do it? Again, these are criminals, ma'am.
Right.
So
do see that. Mm-hmm.
So they just told everybody, you got to take it, and everybody just lined up.
Is there any of these shots that are safe or none of them, like the hepatitis B, the
ma'am,
meningitis?
You make your own decision. But right. The hepatitis is one of the worst.
Really? And she
They're
just
all
got two shots of that in grade 7, which is giving two shots plus a meningitis shot on top of that.
Unbelievable. Meningitis is a very dangerous vaccine.
Oh, my God. So then I won't let my son have it once he hits the grade 7. What about the tetanus shot now? They have to have a tetanus shot before they enter high school.
Yeah, that's another lie. And again, they'll sell you that tetanus is the most essential vaccine to have, and it does give you immunity generally for 7 years from tetanus. The problem is the tetanus shot is the number one shot they use to implant cancer viruses and sterilization. And I've had medical doctors on. It's been in mainstream news in Africa and India where the UN has been caught adding a hormone involved in fertility, it's essential, to tetanus shots. And so the body then has an autoimmune response to the hormone, not just the tetanus. And guess what? When the UN got caught, they said, oh, it's an accident that we put this expensive hormone in there that has nothing to do with the manufacture. And my point is there, it wasn't an accident. Then researchers, let me just finish, this is key. Then researchers pointed out, well, wait a minute. This UN program is only for women. Why do you only want to give tetanus shots to women? Because it wouldn't have hurt men. It was designed to sterilize women, ma'am. And so here's the deal. When I ripped my finger off, almost completely chopped it off, it was hanging by skin, the doctor came in to reattach it, and they said, I'm going to give you a tetanus shot. And I said, no. And they said, well, you cut this on rusty metal. You could die of tetanus. And I said, I'll take my chances, honey. I practice what I preach, I told the female doctor. And so she scrubbed it for about 20 minutes, down into the meat and into the nub and into the cut. And I was just fine. So let me explain something to you. I have not had a tetanus shot. Now, if I step on a nail or something, I'm going to go to the doctor and have them flashay it, go up in there and make it bleed. The problem is it's puncture wounds is where that stuff can grow. But I'm not taking a tetanus shot. Anything else?
No, I wanted to know if I can refuse any of these shots. And now I'm thinking, actually, my doctor, she gave me a tetanus shot last year, saying, oh, it's a new thing. Normally it costs $100, la, la, la. And she just gave me the shot before I could even say no. And now I'm thinking, is there any way I can reverse any of these effects of these shots?
Well, let's be clear. We don't know that all the different varieties of tetanus are going to sterilize you. We just know they've been caught spiking it. I mean, ma'am, I appreciate your call. I mean, here's the deal. I'm not even saying that vaccines couldn't be good. Some evidence shows they help sometimes. The problem is we have a criminal elite of eugenicists who have been caught over and over again adding things to vaccines, water supplies, and food supplies to sterilize people. Everyone has got to see my film, Endgame, Blueprint for Global Enslavement, which details this agenda. And then make your own decision. Make your own decision on whether you're going to take the flu shot, the hepatitis shot, the tetanus shot. The one shot that I think is the hardest one to not take, the one that was hardest for me not to take and to not give my family, is the tetanus. Because tetanus vaccines really do save lives. It really is a threat. But I can't morally come on air and tell people I'm against vaccination and then do it to myself. And it's a very hard decision to make. a very, very hard decision to make. And once a year or so, a nail will stick in my hand or some type of rusty metal will stick and it won't bleed. And, you know, to be frank, I don't like going to the doctor. I'll just take a knife and just stick it in there and get that sucker bleeding. I mean, that's how this works, ladies and gentlemen. But I'm not going to tell you what to do. I wouldn't look down on people if they didn't give their daughters and sons tetanus shots. The problem is I want to have grandchildren. And the other issue is I have to do a cost-benefit analysis. I mean, tetanus is still extremely, extremely, extremely rare and hard to get. Most people that get tetanus get a puncture wound in a barnyard. Tetanus tends to grow in horse manure and cow manure. So if I worked in the farming industry, as I have in the past, I would probably do deep research, try to find a smaller company. There are smaller companies. I wouldn't buy any tetanus shots, and I wouldn't take any tetanus vaccines that came from any big pharma company that sells vaccines to the UN. Okay, I mean, it's real simple. Any huge vaccine program made by specific top-tier vaccine companies, anything they're really pushing on you and anything they tell you is free, we know that they've been caught all over the world with those major programs tainting the vaccines. From the research I've done, smaller companies, smaller lots, it doesn't appear they're spiking them. But because there's no real regulation over any of this, they still have dirty labs, dirty vaccine factories, all sorts of yeast and fungus and dead bacteria and viruses and RNA and mycoplasms get into it. This is such a big, complex situation, Linda. This is a huge, 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 huge issue. I mean, here's an example. 6 years ago, the Food and Drug Administration approved, and it's also approved in England and Canada and many areas of Europe, a vaccine that is sprayed on meat. It's a vaccine. And in Latin, it's translated from Latin to English to mean bacteria-eating virus. Just search the term. In fact, guys, do this for me if you get a chance. Search up the term and give me a mainstream article just because I want to read it to listeners. I don't want them to just believe me. Viruses to be sprayed on meat to kill bacteria. It got approved 5-6 years ago, and they spray it on most meat you buy at the store. If it's a nice, juicy cut of steak, it's probably not on there. But bologna, hot dogs, chicken, because they can then not have sanitary conditions in these slaughterhouses and have chicken manure and horse manure and cow manure and all this other stuff that gets on the meat. That can, and bacteria and E. coli, and they can then not really clean it and just ship it to you because they spray a live virus on the meat. Now, here's another issue. Their argument to get it approved was, well, these viruses are naturally occurring in your stomach. Yes, at thousands and thousands of times at a lower level. Okay. But the other big issue is they then breed these viruses in giant vaccine tanks mixed with all this other growth medium that has other viruses and bacteria in it that is then sprayed on your food. And then there's all been mutations in the virus product that they're spraying on the meat. Ladies and gentlemen, I mean, we're eating a toxic brew. We need to just say no. They approved, 7 years ago, irradiation. They're irradiating beef. They're irradiating vegetables. They're irradiating chicken. They're irradiating fish. And all the studies show it destroys the vitamin and nutrient ring structures. It kills the food. It ruins its dietary value. But see, if they've irradiated it, it can have E. coli on it. Because if they freeze a hamburger patty when it's got E. coli, when you thaw that sucker out, that E. coli reactivates. So instead of having clean slaughterhouses, because, you know, a few people get sick and die, things get cleaned up. No. We'll just baste it in live viruses and we'll just send high-powered radiation through it. Here's an MSNBC headline. FDA okays bacteria-eating virus to treat meat. August 18th, 2006. I said 5-6 years ago, but this says it was only 3.5 years ago. Whatever. Viral meat spray. Advancing food safety. ABC News. Okay. That'll give you an idea. Oh, you don't want to take vaccines. Well, you're eating them every day. Okay, they spray live viruses on your meat. Most of the produce you're eating has got insect genes in it now. We'll be right back. All right, I want to try to get to more of your calls. Jeff, Matt, Gabe, others. The toll-free number to join us, 1-800-259-9231. G. Edward Griffin. Best-selling author of The Creature from Jekyll Island, filmmaker. He's a big part of Fall of the Republic, my new documentary film. He's going to be joining us to talk about the New World Order Master Plan, what this means to society, that the dollar is in free fall plunge right now. I mean, we sit here in a jovial fashion talking about the CIA shipping in narcotics and world government being set up, but do you realize out there what the end of the dollar really means? What this is going to do to our standard of living? I mean, we don't really have any manufacturing or even service left. That's all shutting down. So all we have is our dollar that could buy goods from the world. Well, we're going to lose that now. And I know a lot of people want to kind of hide their head in the sand from this, but if we arrested the bankers or had Congress change monetary policy or quit devaluing the dollar, none of this would have to happen. But the same bankers that engineered the implosion of last year to bring in this new system of control are the people that are in charge of everything. Now, by the way, I gave this number out yesterday, and we got over 70 phone calls. I gave it out one time. We got over 70 phone calls. So we're becoming victims of our own success. It's like trying to read all our emails every day. We get thousands of them. We got some good questions, some good comments. We're going to play some of those serious questions and comments later in the show. As funny as this is not really what we're looking for. We now have a listener comment line, and you can call and leave a 60-second question, comment, message if you disagree, agree, as long as you don't take the Lord's name in vain or there's no profanity. You know, as long as it's a serious, focused question, we'll get it on the air. As funny as it is that Sling Blade called into the show, this is not what we're looking for.
I love trick fried taters, but I hate the new world order, and the globalists. I wish they would go away. They bug me, but I love trick fried taters.
Okay, that is not what we're looking for, folks. This is not playtime. What I want is really 1-minute rants or questions or comments, but I'd love 1-minute rants, news that you think is important. In fact, that's really what I want. I mean, people are always saying cover this, cover that, or cover this event, or cover Al Gore coming to town, or we're looking for activists to show up to this meeting, or Alex, why haven't you covered the fact that Obama has announced he's going to sign an anti-gun UN treaty that under treaty law will restrict the Second Amendment? That's in Reuters. Well, we're going to get to that. But the point is, that's the type of issues you can call in with. 512-646-4444. And by the way, people that call in and leave 15 messages, none of it is going to get on air. We have to then spend time going over your messages. One guy left 30-something messages. Buddy, you're not going to be getting on air. Please, you know, let's be adults here. We've got people calling up going, I want to talk to Alex over and over again. Oh, heaven help me. You know, I just want to have a good time here. But at the same time, the sky has already fallen. We're already in the world government. They're already butchering the dollar. It's only going to get worse from here until we have a national awakening and say no. And the one talk show host who seriously talked about this and fought globalization and the New World Order, though he did it in milk toast form, was Lou Dobbs, and he's been run out of CNN now. The Thought Police drive Lou Dobbs out of CNN. That's the headline up at PrisonPlanet.com and InfoWars.com. Okay, we're going to come back and go to your phone calls in the second hour in 70 seconds. InfoWars.com.
Big Brother, mainstream media, government cover-ups. You want answers? Well, so does he. He's Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network. And now, live from Austin, Texas, Alex Jones.
Coming up in the next segment, I'm going to play a couple more of the comments we've gotten on the comment line at 512-646-4444. The toll-free number to join us live on air is 1-800-259-9231. Eco-barons lead the way. The Times of London says the world's ultra-rich want to help us cut our consuming and tax us. Yes, we'll pay our taxes directly to them. That dovetails with another Times of London headline, Billionaire Club and Bid to Curb Overpopulation. That's what this is really all about. Paul Watson's coming up in 30 minutes to break down the Taliban and Al-Qaeda working for the CIA, the latest developments there. Then G. Edward Griffin's going to be joining us. Right now, let's go to Jeff in New York. Jeff, thanks for holding. You're on the air.
Hello, sir. I have listened to your program for many years. You're doing a wonderful job. My name is Jeffrey Smith. I'm based here in New York City in Manhattan. I'm Northeast Director of the American Free Press, and I can tell you what you're saying is 100% correct. I live with these people. I have Trilateral Commission members as my neighbors. I bump into Bilderberg invitees in the supermarket where I live. Okay, I've known these people for many years. They are exactly as deadly and exactly as malicious as you say. And they want your kids. They want your house. They want everything. They're out of their minds. And do you know why they are allowed to do this? For one reason. Because patriots around this country who are listening to this program sit on their rear ends in their little town, and they cry about the symptomology of this. Why is this happening? Because these characters on the Upper East Side of Manhattan and in London, because increasingly the British are reaching into our country. They always have, but now it's out of control. Know damn well that they have a safe base where they can fire missiles into your little town around the country and destroy your lives, and they're very sure that no one will fire a missile back here into New York. That's their mentality. Everybody... Luke Radowski is doing exactly the right thing. Let me tell you, right now, nothing beats the street. Every patriot in this country should be listening. There should be thousands of Luke Radowskis in the streets of New York yelling bloody murder. These problems aren't coming from Pango Pango. They're not coming from Fargo, North Dakota. They're not coming from San Diego. They're coming from two places, the Upper East Side of Manhattan and London. Fine. London is highly restricted, not so New York. There should be patriots in the streets of New York yelling their bloody heads off about what's happening. Because if you just yell in your little town, it doesn't matter. Because you're providing them a safe...
Well, I'll say this. I mean, yelling bloody murder in your town wakes people up, and this is a process. But it is better to confront the globalists when Al Gore comes to your local bookstore, or Al Gore comes to a local event protesting. You'll end up being... In fact, everywhere Al Gore's going, Tennessee, Florida, California, he's getting booed, he's getting heckled. The people are bringing up that 30-plus thousand scientists say man-made global warming's a fraud. It's being brought up that he's a globalist, that he wants population control. Everywhere, people are going out and protesting him, and instead of it being a one-way street where Al Gore gets to spew his propaganda, our people now are taking over the events. And I guarantee you, we're going to shut this guy down. If they can't pass cap and trade this year or next year, their program is dead. And it's already in deep trouble. And again, the power of when a Geithner or a Bernanke or a Summers or the Queen of England or any of these people go to events, they've got to be bullhorned, they've got to be protested, people've got to point out that they're the tyrants, they're the scum. everywhere they go. Everywhere Karl Rove goes, he's being bullhorned and shouted down. Great job, Jeff. Great call. That's what I like to hear. Taking action. Jeff in Georgia, Matt in California, Gabe in New York, Jim in New York. We're going to come back, go to your calls after I play a couple more clips from the new comment line. Make it focused, make it quick with your questions, comment, or your rant, and it's got a good chance of going on air. Stay with us.
Hey, Alex, this is B-Raz calling from Florida. I had a question about 9/11. I heard that somebody said that they brought down the towers with lasers from satellites, and I had seen there is a footage with a plane flying in the background. There's a plane flying in the background as this is all happening. So I don't know if your sources can confirm that.
The Alex Jones Show, because there's a war on for your mind.
Can I confirm that space lasers blew up the towers? That Marvin the Martian did it?
For the Strontium-12 detonator to destroy the Earth, you pesky Earth creature, I will disintegrate you.
That's another one of the comments we got into the comment line, one of the questions I got. Yes, I've heard all about space-based SDI, Strategic Defense Initiative, lasers from space. The biggest lasers have trouble shooting a missile out of the sky. That's why they use particle beams, because a laser can deflect. A particle beam accelerates particles in the beam and has more punch, more stopping power, more penetration power. Now, are there a lot of super secret classified weapon systems we don't know about? No doubt. But no, there's no way lasers from space could disintegrate the towers. I like to focus on what I can prove. We have firemen and police saying, get back from Building 7. They're going to blow it up. They're going to bring it down. We have BBC 25 minutes before announcing that Building 7 had fallen in its own footprint before it fell. We have clear blast squibs on all three towers as explosions go off. And notice what the national media likes to focus into. They like to focus in on the minority of 9/11 truthers that picked up on the paid disinformation that particle beams and space beams did it, or that no planes hit Tower 1 or 2 and it was holograms. And the reason I knew these were agents day one, if you didn't immediately accept their theory and immediately agree with them, you were a Fed. Even though a lot of these people were actual former Feds themselves publicly. And the way they would run around just aggressively, dressing up in clown suits at public events to make 9/11 truth look stupid. You see these very people being used in the intro of the new National Geographic piece. It's clearly a poison pill operation to engage in such ridiculous activity and behavior that it discredits 9/11 truth. That'd be like if I said, the Gulf of Tonkin was staged, it's now been declassified, that our ships were never attacked in the Gulf of Tonkin, and that was used to start the Vietnam War. And instead of putting on the evidence that the LBJ tapes have been released, the NSA has declassified it, the CIA has declassified it in the last 4 years, if I came on air and said, aliens attacked our ships in the Gulf of Tonkin. It was not the North Vietnamese. It was an alien false flag. That would then discredit those of us that believe that the Gulf of Tonkin was staged. Now, it's been proven and admitted that it was staged. There's no debating that now. You know, we see this in the 60s, 70s, 80s, and 90s with mainstream television shows about conspiracy theories. And they would say, tonight, the private Federal Reserve. And next, after the private Federal Reserve, which is true and real and verified, we will look at blood-drinking space aliens from planet Glibbleglob. See, well, they have a gross term for it. It's something in the punch bowl. It's like putting a centipede in the punch bowl. Or it's like putting cockroaches in the punch bowl or something else. No one wants to drink out of the punch bowl. See, that's why they wanted Lou Dobbs gone. He was an icon of financial and television news, 29 years at CNN from its founding in 1980. He was highly respected, and he would read official UN documents. This all started about 6-7 years ago when Lou Dobbs would read a UN document about how they were going to set up a global government, end the dollar, set up a global currency. And he'd always been on the global reservation. He'd always gone along with the system, been mainline. So he had a contract where he had total editorial control. It was his show. And so he did a few reports, what, 7 years ago or so, about the UN taking over America because he had their own documents, and he was called a kook. And so Lou Dobbs said, okay, I will just start doing more on this. I'll start proving there's an SPP. I'll start proving there's a North American Union. I'll start showing you their own documents and their own admissions. And he won. He got top ratings. He proved it was true. He won over the audience. Number one ratings on CNN, and they ran him out of there. They convinced him the last year to tone it down a bit. His ratings went down, and they basically forced him out. His house got shot up. All this happened. So Lou Dobbs got run out of CNN. So he was basically driven out of CNN, and the celebration, the huge celebration dealing with this is everywhere. The radical Mecho La Raza bullies are celebrating that their racism succeeds. They get to call for all whites to be driven out of North America. They get to have the slogan, for those in our race, everything, for those outside the race, nothing. They get to sow racial division and cultural division and hatred while posing as if they're liberals who are against it. See, the globalists want our country divided. The Western states are already more than 50% Hispanic. No one wants to fight with Hispanics. Hispanics are part of America. Hispanics are good Americans by and large. But the media is hyping and promoting, and big Fortune 500 companies are funding the most virulent anti-American pro-globalist forces out of Mexico and Latin America, who openly say they want to break up this country as part of Aslan. And the big banks want to drive down the wages, bankrupt the states with the welfare program so they can bring in more control. And so that's why these groups are natural allies. But if you're the average Hispanic American, you should love Lou Dobbs. And actually, the polls show that. Gallup poll, 81% of Hispanics want to control the borders. Well, yeah, Hispanics aren't stupid. They know 600 million Latin Americans that want to come here and growing, 100 plus million in Mexico. They know that that will turn us into Mexico, turn us into a third world country. We need to help Mexico. We need to make the people stay down there so they have a real revolution and take their country back from the corrupt oligarchs down there, instead of using the U.S. as a revolutionary steam valve for the criminals, the corrupt, the people fleeing, the poorest, to all come up here. You know, Mexico has more billionaires than the U.S. Did you know that? Mexico has triple the natural resources in every index that the United States has. More timber, more oil, better soil, more gold, more water. Mexico is incredibly rich. It's like South Africa or something. But they have one of the poorest populations in the world because they have a corrupt elite. And their corrupt elite print textbooks funded by the Ford Foundation, given to all Mexican school children. The average person goes and gets a seventh grade education, and in the fifth, sixth, and seventh grade, they give them textbooks that we've published and posted online, teaching them that America belongs to Mexico and must be brought down. And our government loves it because the globalists run our government, and they want to break down the U.S. and bring us into the North American Union and make everybody slaves. Here is Lou Dobbs yesterday with his swan song.
Tonight, I want to turn to a personal note, if I may, and address a matter that has raised some curiosity. This will be my last broadcast here on CNN, where I've worked for most of the past 30 years and where I have many friends and colleagues whom I admire deeply and respect greatly. I'm the last of the original anchors here on CNN, and I'm proud to have had the privilege of helping to build the world's first news network. I'm grateful for the many opportunities that CNN has given me over these many years. I've tried to reciprocate with the full measure of my ability and my energy. Over the past 6 months, it's become increasingly clear that strong winds of change have begun buffeting this country and affecting all of us. And some leaders in media, politics, and business have been urging me to go beyond the role here at CNN and to engage in constructive problem solving, as well as to contribute positively to a better understanding of the great issues of our day, and to continue to do so in the most honest and direct language possible. I've talked extensively with Jonathan Klein. John's the president of CNN, and as a result of those talks, John and I have agreed to a release from my contract that will enable me to pursue new opportunities. At this point, I'm considering a number of options and directions, and I assure you I will let you know when I set my course. I truly believe that the major issues of our time include the growth of our middle class, the creation of more jobs, healthcare, immigration policy, the environment, climate change, and our military involvement, of course, in Afghanistan and Iraq. But each of those issues is, in my opinion, informed by our capacity to demonstrate strong resilience of our now weakened capitalist economy and demonstrate the political will to overcome the lack of true representation in Washington, D.C. I believe these to be profoundly, critically important issues, and I will continue to strive to deal honestly and straightforwardly with those issues in the future. Unfortunately, these issues are now defined in the public arena by partisanship and ideology rather than by rigorous, empirical thought and forthright analysis and discussion. I'll be working diligently to change that as best I can. And as for the important work of restoring inspiration to our great free society and our market economy, I will strive as well to be a leader in that national conversation. It's been my great honor to work with each and every person at this wonderful network. I will be eternally grateful to CNN, to Ted Turner, and to all of my colleagues and friends, and of course to you at home. I thank you, and may God bless you.
Do you want to get away from additives and preservatives in your food? Need alternatives to conventional food preparation? Do you want to save the fruits of your gardening labor? And are you looking for an excellent gift idea? Then check out the Excalibur Dehydrator. Dehydration is one of the healthiest, most cost-effective, and fun ways to feed yourself and your family. Make healthy snacks like fruit roll-ups and beef jerky. Store healthy food in case of an emergency with no added salts, fats, or preservatives. And save hundreds of dollars by drying it yourself with the Excalibur Dehydrator. The Excalibur Dehydrator comes with an industry-leading exclusive 10-year warranty. And when you order, you'll receive a free book filled with amazing, easy recipes, a $25 value free for a limited time. Just mention coupon code GCN. Learn more and order your Excalibur Dehydrator today at drying123.com. That's drying123.com. Drying123.com. Or call 1-800-875-4254. That's 1-800-875-4254. Season's greetings and health and wellness from Excalibur Dehydrate.
There must be some kind of way out of here, said the Joker to the thief. There's too much confusion. I can't get no relief. Gold hits record high above $1,123 today. The price of gold surged, AFP reports, to an all-time high point above $1,123 per ounce on Thursday as trade was driven by buoyant stock markets and the weak U.S. currency, analysts said. On the London bullion market, gold jumped as high as $1,123.38 an ounce. The metal remains supported by stronger equities and weaker dollars at James Moore, analyst and specialist metals at the bullion desk. Gold has blazed a record-breaking trail in recent weeks on the back of the struggling U.S. unit, which makes the dollar price precious metal cheaper for buyers holding stronger currencies and therefore tends to boost demand. I also have a big report out of the Times of London and the London Telegraph today that gold supplies are running out worldwide. And with that headline, Ted Anderson joins us.
Yeah, hey, Alex, you're right about that. I mean, Barrick Gold has really had to cut back on its output, and their short contracts are gone now. They've really got in trouble with that. The output right now, I mean, they used to get 12 tons or 12 grams of gold per ton of ore at mines, and now the average is down to 3 grams per ton. So you can see what's been going on. They've pretty well have depleted the ability to pull it out of the ground, and now we have this big run in the marketplace. Currency's falling apart. The U.S. dollar's weakening, and obviously, you know, places like India, China, I mean, you can just name it, pretty much any country in the complete world, including the United States right now, is considering beefing up their reserves and yeah, it's putting a lot of upward pressure on gold.
And let me give folks this news that just adds gas to the fire. London Telegraph today, Barrick shuts hedge book as world gold supply runs out. Global gold production is in terminal decline despite record prices and Herculean efforts by mining companies to discover fresh sources of ore in remote spots, according to the world's top producer, Barrick Gold. Aaron Regent, president of the Canadian gold giant, said that global output has been falling by roughly 1 million ounces a year since the start of the decade. Total mine supply has dropped by 10% as ore quality erodes, implying that the roaring bull market of the last 8 years may have further to run. So adding to the dollar imploding and all these currencies pouring into gold and the IMF selling gold off and people grabbing it up, they're now coming in with what we've been talking about for years, that gold supplies coming out of the ground are shrinking quickly and no new major veins are being found. Ted, I mean, I tell you, some of these analysts might be right. It might go to several thousand dollars an ounce, four or five, six, 7,000. I don't know. This is crazy. You happen to, again, have bought gold when it was a lot less. You're about to run out of gold that you bought in the market when it was, what, 1,050 or so. Tell folks quickly about today's offer and what you've got and how long it's going to last.
Well, yeah, with gold running up like it did, I just held my prices. I'm still at 246 on the franc and at British Sovereign at 299. Both of those should be well higher than they are right now. The U.S. Eagles, the Maple Leafs, I mean, I'm just trying to think of all the different products that we have. I'm out of those Graham bars. Those are pretty cool, but they're gone. You know, the thing about it is, Alex, I mean, my salespeople are talking to people that have been going down to their local coin dealers and they're trying to buy gold and silver coins, and there's just not enough supply out there.
Yeah, that's in the news. A lot of even big dealers are running out or have huge premiums. A lot of the small shops are completely out or almost out. Not Ted Anderson. He's a big player, been doing this 30 years. He's got it, and at under market prices, this is an insanely good deal, in my opinion. Give his brokers a call right now. They'll be there till midnight, 800-686-2237. Tell them it's the Alex Jones special, or you will pay more on all these deals. Tell them it's the Alex Jones, Ted Anderson special you heard on the radio, and you will get substantively lower prices, 800-686-2237. Ted?
Yeah, you're just right, Alex. Right now at this particular time, I don't think you can afford to wait. Waiting means more money, and that's what's just been going on. I've had customers ask me that. Should I look for a lower price? Should I wait? And the truth of the matter is, even if you wait a matter of 4 weeks, you could be paying $100 an ounce more for gold. And I don't think that's worth the risk. I mean, yeah, I'll be buying when the market goes down. I've already discounted the price in reflecting of that. But you know what? The gold prices are going up. I don't think that waiting around and trying to find a better time, I don't think it's worth your while. I think you'll lose money that way.
Absolutely, ladies and gentlemen. Give Ted Anderson's great brokers a call. Absolutely no pressure. It's like you're ordering a Happy Meal at McDonald's. You call up, you tell them what you want, 800-686-2237. Here's that number. If you'd listened to me 6 years ago, folks, you'd have made almost four times your money back. It's about to... Ted, is it four times yet? It's about to be four times in the last 6 years.
Well,
increase.
It certainly is. At $250 an ounce gold, now we're over 1,000, so it's above four times.
800-686-2237, 800-686-2237. Thanks, Ted. Okay, Paul Watson's only going to be with us about 12 minutes in this long segment. Then I'm going to go directly to Jeff, Matt, Gabe, Jim, Ken, and others. Then before G. Edward Griffin joins us, I've got a huge news blitz of just incredibly important news that I haven't gotten to. Number one, Reuters is reporting Obama says he's going to sign a UN treaty that has power over our Congress that can potentially ban firearms. I mean, you cannot make stuff up this bad. This is insane. So that's coming up as well. We'll raise the alarm yet again. And don't forget, they're going to mark up to the, well, they have marked it up. It's going to the full Senate. It's passed the House that the government Obamacare, the takeover of health care, the 17th. That's 5 days from now. Next week, they're going to try to pass the health care bill in the Senate. And they're talking about the week after that, by the 21st or 2nd, trying to pass the carbon tax takeover bill. It's all happening right now. Obama came in. He brought a bunch of Democrats in. His approval rating is plunging as people find out he's a globalist just like Bush. But he's still got the Congress and the executive. He's got the trifecta. And he can ram through basically anything he wants, barring a miracle. Call Congress, call the senators, call the White House, go crazy. They said that hate crime bill restricting free speech wouldn't pass. It did. They said the health care bill and the carbon tax bill wouldn't pass the House. It did. I mean, this is serious business going on right now. By the way, we sold out of the first printing of Fall of the Republic, and I was on the fence on what cover I wanted to use. It is Fall of the Republic, Volume 1, The Presidency of Barack H. Obama. Because Obama is the front man. Obama is the puppet. He's the guy that they're selling their agenda on. I actually feel sorry for Obama at a certain level. He's a puppet just like Bush. President Obama is a slick Harvard lawyer reading off a teleprompter. That's why he can't give a speech without one. It's not that he isn't smart. It's that he has an agenda. He isn't basically allowed to even talk unless it's pre-scripted, just like Bush. He was just a terrible teleprompter reader. But the film is titled The Presidency of Barack H. Obama because it's, again, all being sold under him. But I decided to have this new run go with my second favorite cover. And the more I looked at it, it is my favorite. So I went with this. And we just got him in today. Fall of the Republic with the Statue of Liberty plunging down into the ground. I think this is probably even a better cover. And so I'll show you this cover next hour when we go live at PrisonPlanet.tv. And now any DVDs you buy at InfoWars.com will have the new cover. And if you already have the first run, why not buy the second run? Because that's how you support us and finance our expansion here. And believe me, our audience has tripled in the last 2 years, more than tripled. Internet ratings, AM, FM, all the ratings, all the statistics show a tripling at least. Guess what? We're making the same amount of money we were making 2 years ago. So we've tripled our audience, and we're just staying the same when it comes to financing. That scares me. Because following the trend, that means in a year, as the economy worsens, we're going to start having trouble paying the bills. A lot of people already can't pay the bills and are going bankrupt. That's why we're not making as much money as we were. So see it as a donation, as support, so we can continue and be strong when you purchase the books and videos at InfoWars.com. You can also call toll-free. We have some combo specials where you can get Fall of the Republic and get the DVD documentary Reflections and Warnings with Aaron Russo free. It's a great film. It's free when you get it with Fall of the Republic and Endgame or Fall of the Republic and the Obama Deception. All available at InfoWars.com. They make great Christmas gifts. And to also announce something, in fact, I didn't think when we were going to have Watson on today about this other issue that I would bring this up, but I didn't psychologically notice that we're doing two things today. Watson, who heads up PrisonPlanet.tv, the online membership where you can see all our films in the highest quality, commercial-free archives in a higher bit rate of the radio show, a better podcast, my book, Paul Watson's book. We've got a David Icke hour-long extra that's highly produced. It's like a mini film just for PrisonPlanet.tv members that went up last night. We're going to be adding a lot more for members. 15 cents a day, $5.95 a month, and your support at PrisonPlanet.tv makes so much what we do here possible. Now, we do this every year in the second half of November into December, and it ends with the first of the year, you can get 5 months free at prisonplanet.tv. You buy 6.5 months is what it comes up to in the discount, and you get the other 5.5 months for free. 5.5 months free when you sign up for a year. It's normally $5.95 a month. I think that brings it down to like $4. I mean, the cost of 2 cups of coffee. You get the live TV show. We can't do this. We're not funded by George Soros. That's why I want to thank all the PrisonPlanet.tv members. Paul, tell folks about everything we're adding to PrisonPlanet.tv.
Well, yeah, if you get the new yearly special price, it's actually almost a 50% discount on the month-to-month price. So it's more like a little over $3 a month. But we've just added the David Icke interview yesterday for members. Every single Alex Jones film is on there. You can stream it. You can download it. There's other films by other documentarians. Daily video and audio archives of the Alex Jones show, all there in one place, searchable archives. And also, obviously, you get the live video stream for the second 2 hours normally of your show. And then there's special reports, conferences, speeches going back over 5 years now in the archives that you can go and watch that are still there. So it's basically a library of multimedia material that's readily accessible for that special price.
And it's only getting better. Okay, you know, I tend to get corruption fatigue. Somebody who works in a slaughterhouse doesn't get upset by seeing cows have their throats slit and hitting the head with a high-powered jackhammer. Well, it's the same thing with this tyranny. I psychologically began to realize the last few weeks that I haven't gotten as upset as I should, and I haven't made as big a deal as I should about the fact that there are scores of articles in France and Germany and England, mainstream news, saying, why are U.S. troops busing and flying Taliban and al-Qaeda around? Why are they protecting the opium fields? Why do they keep catching Taliban and al-Qaeda with U.S. weapons? Why is the West using different Taliban groups against other Taliban groups? And so we have all these headlines, and that made me go back to the Times of London and other MSNBC as well. It's in my film Road to Tyranny, 2002. The airlift of evil is what MSNBC called it, where 6,000 Taliban and al-Qaeda commanders at the end of the so-called Afghan war were loaded on C-130s and flown to safety in Pakistan to then start waging war against that government. And top U.S. military officials went public and said, why are we protecting these people? And it turns out the Taliban, who was founded by the CIA in the late 1970s, they actually started the war with the Russians. It's just a historical fact. Brzezinski's written a book about it and brags about it. And this is a long story short, folks. It's an incredible labyrinth of evidence. And that they just went and got goat herders and poor people and 12, 13, 14-year-old kids, put them in the front lines. And our generals noticed they weren't allowed to bomb the actual Taliban and al-Qaeda strongholds. They could only bomb these conscripts in these foxholes. It was totally staged war. Then the real Taliban and al-Qaeda, once the cities were handed over, were flown out to safety. So it was a totally staged war. Now that's even more of that evidence is coming out. So the question is, why are our troops really there? Paul Joseph Watson, give us a news blitz.
Well, the fact is, at the height of the Bush administration's 2007 surge in Iraq, there were a total of 186,000 troops in both Iraq and Afghanistan. There were 26,000 in Afghanistan and 160,000 in Iraq. Now, nearly a year after the so-called peace candidate, the Nobel Peace Prize winner, Obama, is in office, there are now at least, and I stress at least, 189,000 troops in Afghanistan and Iraq. So there are more troops now deployed than there were at the height of the Bush administration. And all that Obama has done is moved a bunch of the troops from Iraq to Afghanistan. And obviously, to create that justification, you need the phantom of an enemy. And that's what the Taliban provides. Now, 8 years after the invasion, more than 8 years, the Taliban now have permanent strongholds in 80% of Afghanistan. So if the goal of the war on terror was to eliminate the Taliban from Afghanistan, it's completely failed. And why? Well, that's because the Taliban, since their very creation by the Pakistani ISI and the CIA in the 80s, serve as the fundamental justification for the US presence in Afghanistan. So they need them to remain there. Now we look at what the Pentagon's doing in Afghanistan, what it's done over the last 3 years, and what it plans to do over the coming years, which is namely, just as they've done in Iraq, to build military bases in the country. They've spent $2.7 billion over the last 3 years building military bases in Afghanistan, and they're going to spend another $1.3 billion over the next couple of years building another 40 military bases in Afghanistan. So they need the Taliban there as a justification to remain in the country. And this is why we see articles such as the one today out of The Nation, how the US funds the Taliban, about how the US government just pays off these Taliban members so they don't shoot at them. As he said, the Taliban is divided into numerous factions, and many of them are for sale to the highest bidder, and the US simply pays them off, and the Taliban allows their supplies to get through. So it's a completely phony war. And then you've got the other faction of the Taliban, which is blowing the whistle on the fact that a lot of the Taliban leaders are in the direct pay of the CIA and Israel, which is exactly what Qari Zainuddin said back in June. He's a tribal leader in Pakistan, a Taliban member who defected. He blew the whistle on the fact that another Pakistani Taliban chief called Baitullah Massoud was in the pay of the CIA and Mossad, and shortly after, he was assassinated by that very Pakistani Taliban chief. So anybody who calls them out on the fact that they're just mercenaries for hire, which the CIA and the Israelis are paying off to continue their domination in Afghanistan, gets assassinated. Then, of course, you have the revelations that were reported in the New York Times recently about how the Afghanistan president, Hamid Karzai, who has just had his phony, corrupt election victory validated by the UN, even though it was blatantly fraudulent, his brother is the kingpin of the country's booming opium trade in Afghanistan, which, as we know, is still at record levels. 92% of the opium exported in the world comes out of Afghanistan and ends up on our streets and destroys young people's lives in the West. Now, the kingpin over that in Afghanistan, one of them is Hamid Karzai's brother, called Ahmed Wali Karzai. And as the Times reported on October 28th, he is directly on the CIA payroll. He's the middleman for the opium exports out of Afghanistan that have been controlled by the CIA since at least the 80s, and of course that was interrupted briefly before 9/11 when the Taliban leaders cut down on opium production, and it was of course ramped up beyond all records after the invasion in 2001. Now what the Nation article also brings to light is the fact that Ahmed Rateb Popal, who is another Taliban leader in Afghanistan, former Taliban leader when the invasion happened in 2001, and he was instrumental in the Mujahideen effort against the Soviets in the late 80s. He's also the cousin of President Hamid Karzai, and he is also instrumental in overseeing the opium production and the opium exports out of Afghanistan, as well as his brother. So that's two cousins of Hamid Karzai who are instrumental on that. And these two guys are actually charged in the United States, and they pleaded guilty to importing heroin into the United States in 1996, and now they're in Afghanistan, overseeing the opium production, overseeing the imports into the US, even though they're convicted drug-dealing criminals, but they're now representing the CIA's interest in terms of opium production and export
in
Afghanistan.
We've got about 2 minutes left to hit on other little key points, but I want listeners to understand we're merely grazing the surface here. It is a joke how much of this is publicly admitted and how Brzezinski's written two books about it. Obama's chief foreign policy advisor. It is a joke how public this is. And it's just incredible, incredible hypocrisy. So in summation, any other little tidbits you want to point out? And, of course, on top of that, then, your take on what the real reasons are that we're in Afghanistan and we'll never be leaving.
Well, the reasons are that they want to build the military bases as a launch pad to go into Iran and to go into the few remaining other countries that are not completely under the control and jurisdiction of the U.S. military-industrial complex. In the meantime, they're making vast profits in this huge black hole of weapons sales and logistics and, of course, the opium production.
And don't forget sex trade. They're kidnapping kids. That's admitted mainstream news.
Yeah, but long-term, it's just about geopolitical domination, as is laid out in the Project for a New American Century game plan. Full spectrum domination, and they're getting the military bases in place now. They've already built over 100. They're building more in the country, and you can't remain in the country. You can't occupy the country if you don't have the mirage of an enemy to sell to the general public.
That's it. So they manufacture the enemy for just a few billion dollars and then have a multi-trillion dollar war. And it doesn't matter if Bush leaves office or Obama or Mitt Romney or whoever's coming next. It will all continue just with different rhetoric. And Obama is the man of peace, massively expanding war everywhere. We might as well give Genghis Khan the Nobel Peace Prize. Why don't they give it to him in a posthumous manner, Paul?
Well, exactly. I mean, we haven't even mentioned Pakistan either. He's more of a warmonger than Bush was, and the numbers prove it.
Well, Paul, I know in the next week you're going to do a big detailed report on all of this. Great job over at PrisonPlanet.com and PrisonPlanet.tv. Have a great day, my friend.
Thanks, Alex.
Okay, let's jam in some of your great phone calls. Jeff in Georgia, thanks for holding. You're on the air.
Hello?
Yes, sir.
Hey, Alex, how are you doing today?
Good, sir.
You've had a great show so far. I've sat and been entertained and listened to you up to this point, been patient on hold here. I wanted to add to your geopolitical control mechanism, and I want to go back to a statement that Geithner said, that we should take advantage of any kind of disaster or natural occurrence or whatever so that we can push some agendas through that we normally couldn't push through.
And that also said in a Wall Street Journal TV interview with the real head of the White House, Rahm Emanuel.
Right, I remember that as well. I wanted to bring attention to the southeast portion of the United States here lately because we have been suffering through quite a lot of rain and flooding recently. And I wanted to talk about how FEMA created their flood zones and expanded it after the Hurricane Katrina disaster.
They did the same thing in Austin. They've made the floodplain on Lake Travis. It's almost 20 feet higher than it's ever been, areas that have never had water on them, and that gives FEMA jurisdiction.
Right, and we're facing the same problem here in northeast Georgia, where we're dealing with FEMA's map that's placing our entire home in a flood zone. Where
they're saying mountaintops, literally hilltops, they're now saying in Austin are floodplains.
Sure, and we have very much control of all our water here. And the truth of the matter is, it looks like that they're drawing this information from topographical features of maybe 35 or 40 years old, and they haven't even taken in consideration the development of our neighborhood, much less our street out front that's actually sitting in a flood zone, apparently. And
what that is, amongst other things, is a big gift to the insurance companies because now they can jack up your prices and control development.
Right. And, you know, the insurance companies are getting hit hard these days with all kind of flood claims and whatnot. But I wanted to say that this is the time that we can actually, as the people, use this all this rain as a weapon against this kind of political control, because this is a perfect timing of events that will give us the way to collect the data and actually prove that the flood zone information and the mapping was incorrect, and actually just rush through to provide an electronic database type system that FEMA worked off of.
Yes, FEMA needs to be opposed in its power grabs. They've got another bill to say all above and below groundwater is now navigable rivers, so the Coast Guard and the federal government can take control of it and restrict development. It's all about the rewilding.
Sure, and it'll definitely hurt a lot of families. We're faced with fighting Bank of America right now, who recently took over our mortgage and bought it from a smaller company. We feel like that we were almost targeted because of the mapping that FEMA was able to distribute, you know, nationally.
Amazing, Jeff. Matt in California, you're on the air.
Hey, what's up, Alex? How you doing, dude?
Hey, buddy.
Hey, I have two things. One thing is that I noticed every single weekend there is a DUI checkpoint. Every single weekend. I live in Anaheim, and it's close to Fullerton and Placentia. I'm 19 years old. I go to Fullerton College.
And those are all federal grants training you to live in checkpoints. And now in California, they have the Marines and Army out at checkpoints.
Oh, yeah, man. The police, they're just ridiculous, dude. You go through the checkpoint, and you say, oh, why are you searching me? And they say, oh, we're just trying to stop drunk drivers. It's always with the drunk drivers. They always have to make you feel like you're less than human, like the drunk driver's less than human or something. They try to, like, make them seem, you know, less than human, you know?
Yes, all of the public is guilty until proven innocent, and the feds are funding states like Texas to pass laws where no warrants now. The police just pull you over and take blood on the side of the road in the dark of the night, jamming the needles into your arms with pleasure. It's all part of the freedom.
Big Brother, mainstream media, government cover-ups. You want answers? Well, so does he. He's Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network. And now, live from Austin, Texas, Alex Jones.
Welcome to the halfway point in the four-hour transmission. We're here live, noon to 4 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. Central Standard Time, 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. Pacific, 10 to 2 Mountain. Thank you for joining us. Continuing with your phone calls, G. Edward Griffin on the globalist master plan to take over the planet. He's been fighting for 45 years, best-selling author, researcher, filmmaker, G. Edward Griffin, joining us after this quick break. Let's go ahead now and go to Gabe in New York. Gabe, you're on the air.
Hello, Mr. Jones. I have a couple quick points I want to push for. Yesterday, you discussed the carbon taxation, and I got to tell you, I'm affected by that now. I got asthma, and they just got rid of the generic company, so now I'm stuck. Instead of paying $25 for my medication, I got to pay $60. And it's all for the environment. These eugenicists, they love us so much. They also love my grandmother, who they gave DS, a fertility drug, which had serious birth defects. And I also found some other interesting information I wanted to run by you. I found an interesting New World Order quote on a German propaganda archives. They talk about, it's listen to the Secret of Japan's Strength. That's, you can find it. And what else we got here? Oh, yeah. I have photos. I have some photos I'd like to issue you, because during the Memorial Day weekend at Jones Beach, I had military troops on the boardwalk with 30 caliber machine guns.
And amazing.
How do I send those to you?
The best email, CC it to Aaron at Infowars.com. Aaron with two A's. Send them to showtips at Infowars.com. and write a short blurb describing what you saw. But no, the Homeland Security's announced they're going to put 379,000 troops on the streets of America. And when Aaron and crew were in Louisiana doing interviews for the new film last week, they ran into City Year with camouflage on their faces. No, you cannot make this stuff up. And we're just drowning in evidence. We've got so much evidence coming in, piling up of the slow, incremental paramilitary takeover of the country that I don't even know where to start. It's just mind-blowing. What were the troops with their machine guns doing?
You're not exaggerating on any of this information at all. I could throw out a million points here. All my rich banking cousin does is tell me to get a life, and I'm delusional to even question this stuff. His wife works for Pfizer. I mean, these people are disgusting. You want to know what the New World Order is? Come visit my family for a weekend. You can go find out, because these people have the same psychology that you have discussed with J. Edward Griffin. They're the same type of people. Disgusting. And then I look at the population, for example. The Yankees World Series, the Yankees fans won. What I see these people doing, they're cheering in the streets. They care more about the fact that they have Philly fans out there. They're willing to go out and fight in the streets. I have video footage where fans are fighting each other. They have more passion to fight each other over a baseball game than Goldman Sachs robbing the country for $23.7 trillion in broad daylight. I guess we got to start telling these fans that Goldman Sachs are a bunch of Phillies or Red Sox fans, and maybe these Yankee fans will start waking up.
That's a good idea. Tell New Yorkers that Goldman Sachs is the Red Sox, and Goldman Sachs will all be arrested next week. No, I mean, that's a great point you make, that people will go out and riot and kill each other over a football or baseball or basketball game. Or, you know, when the Bulls used to win in Chicago, you know, they'd burn half the town. Oh, but so what if foreign banks are openly killing the dollar and destroying our children's future? That's wonderful. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we'll be right back. Now, that was a good call, Gabe in New York. That's the kind of rants I want on the comment line that we're going to start playing more and more clips of here on the show. 512-646-4444. Thank you so much, caller. We'll be right back with G. Edward Griffin on the other side of this quick break. We're going to go live at PrisonPlanet.tv. So start your engines.
He's the T-Rex of political talk. Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network.
Well, he's going to be with us till about 45 after in the next hour. And we're going to have wide open phones next hour for G. Edward Griffin. He's a writer and documentary film producer with many successful titles to his credit. He's listed in Who's Who in America. He's a well-known because of his talent for researching difficult topics and presenting them in clear terms that all can understand. He has dealt with such diverse subjects as archaeology and ancient earth history, the Federal Reserve System, international banking, terrorism, internal subversion, the history of taxation, U.S. foreign policy, science and politics, cancer therapy, the Supreme Court, and the United Nations. He's best known for his works include The Creature from Jekyll Island, World Without Cancer, The Open Gates of Troy, No Place to Hide, The Capitalist Conspiracy, More Deadly Than War, The Grand Design, The Great Prison Break, and The Fearful Master. And he's had a long, long, long media history. 45 years fighting the New World Order, G. Edward Griffin?
Well, Alex, I think I really was in full armor and on my horse about 1960. Yeah,
so we're
definitely 1960.
So we're talking about 49 years.
Yeah.
Well, you've certainly done well. You're a living icon, and certainly, you know, you're like good wine, though. You've aged well. You just get sharper and even better.
Thank you. I love that. An icon. Well, okay, I have to be something. You might as well be an icon.
Well, let me just put a plug in here right now, because you are a big part of Fall the Republic. And I want to unveil to listeners the new cover. The first couple of runs we did with the Obama on the cover. And I started thinking, you know, I don't want to make this just about Obama, even though he's their front man. And so we have the Statue of Liberty plunging down to its destruction with Obama down here at the podium. Fall of the Republic Collector's Edition, now available at Infowars.com. When you order it, this is the cover and the film you'll be getting. And I got to say, this latest print, we even did a better res, higher quality encode. Most people won't notice it, but this is just the most beautiful encode we've ever done on a film. It just looks like dynamite. The information is power-packed, and G. Edward Griffin is a big contributor to Fall of the Republic, so I hope folks will get it today. Okay, going back to G. Edward Griffin. G. Edward, I've got so many questions, so many things I want to go over with you today, but the first thing I want to ask you is, 49 years fighting this, publishing best-selling books, really the name over the last half century, you know, you're the person that people point at and say, he's the icon. Even if some of the old timers were still alive, you would still be bigger than they are. And I'm not saying that for ego. I'm pointing out you have been a prime mover, a central force against the globalist and with the long view of history. If we wouldn't have had you and others 50 years ago fighting and planting seeds and getting laughed at, we wouldn't be having this giant awakening that's blooming today that is really threatening the globalists. And they admit in their own documents, as you know, that they could lose control. That's why they're trying to bum rush us right now and bring in the entire program and accelerate it. So people need to understand it's not going to be an instant victory. And we'll talk about your long view of history and how we can beat these people coming up. But first, what is it like to see them openly announcing the world government, openly announcing the carbon tax, openly announcing it's going to be the IMF as the world rulers? We will pay our taxes to private bankers, to Al Gore. Everything you wrote about 20, 30, 40 years ago, because you were reading their own documents, to now see it actually taking place. The republic is falling. The dollar is falling. World government is rising. Break that down. Get into the healthcare takeover, the collectivist, the carbon tax, what we're witnessing, and with your long view of history, how you think this fight is going to unfold. G. Edward Griffin.
Well, that's quite an interesting perspective wrapped up in a question there. I have to answer your question with a single word. It feels eerie. It's like having a bad nightmare, and you wake up and you say, oh, that was just a nightmare. Oh, come on, get it out of your mind. It's just a nightmare. Repeat after me. It's just a nightmare. And then all of a sudden, the events and the nightmare start to unfold before your eyes, and you go back and you say, oh, no, it's not a nightmare. This is reality. And it's that kind of an eerie feeling. You could probably write a good movie around that theme of a nightmare that becomes reality. But that's really how I feel about it. You know, when you read the documents of the elitists of the world and you know exactly what they plan and how they think, It is sort of an academic experience in the beginning because you're still living in a system of a lot of freedom and quite a bit of security and prosperity. And so what you're saying, even though you know it's true, has this unreal-like quality. You think, well, am I right? Are they really going to pull that off? And then you look around and say, yep, they're moving on it. So then you go back and you get serious again. But there's a long period in the beginning, Alex, when I have to tell you it just didn't seem quite real, even though I knew it was. So here we are all these years later, and now, of course, there's no question that the scenarios that we put together, not our scenarios, it was their scenario, actually, that it was quite real, and we're living through it now, and it's kind of like, I use another analogy, it's like you're drifting along in a small rowboat or a canoe, and the water is kind of quiet and calm, and the birds are singing. It's a beautiful sunny day, and there's the water is very calm, and you're moving and enjoying watching the fish jump and all that sort of thing. But you know, because you've looked at the map, you know that you're in a river that's headed toward a huge waterfall, and you have a pretty good idea that it's down there, maybe a couple of days away. So you're not worried about it now, but you know you've got to get out of that stream of water pretty soon. And so you're drifting along and everything is fine, but the closer you get to that waterfall, the more rapid the water seems to move. And now here we find ourselves with this little rowboat moving quite rapidly, and you can hear the sound, the roar of the water. You can't see it yet, but you can hear it. So that's another way of looking at it. I'm trying to give you the emotional experience that I have. It's a very unnerving thing.
Well, that's, I mean, that is a perfect way to describe it. And we've now rounded the bend and we see the mist and steam rising up from Niagara. And I believe we can now actually see the waterfall. I mean, they're openly announcing world government. They're openly announcing carbon taxes, micromanaging our lives, one-child policies. Times of London comes out and says billionaire club and bid to curb overpopulation, secret meetings. We know that this is a hellish system. And just like people could hear the waterfall in 1917 Russia, or they could hear the waterfall in 1935 Germany, as bad as it already is, we know it's going to get a lot worse. And as you said, as we near the fall, the water gets faster and faster and faster. And the globalists were denying, they were blaring on loudspeakers from the woods on the sides of the river for decades that there is no waterfall. Everything's fine. Go to sleep in the rowboat. Relax. Drink a beer. Watch a ball game. And now as we see the waterfall and see broken ships at the bottom from history and tyranny past and mass murder past, and we see all the ghosts of those killed by tyranny, they're now saying, oh, it is a waterfall, but you're only safe by going over the edge. Global government is the solution. G. Edward Griffin.
Well, I think you said it so well, as usual, Alex. Yeah, they're saying, look, if you stay where you are, you're going to be dashed against a rock. So therefore, go over the waterfall. Come with us. We will lead you over the waterfall. There's a nice big lake down there, and it'll be all calm again. The beginning of the video that you produced, that magnificent video, The Fall of the Republic, you've got a speech by Obama in which he's talking about the need for change. It's kind of his campaign rhetoric, but re-wrapped up in post-presidential events, that, yes, we had no choice. So we had to, we can't look back, he was saying. We can't ignore it. We can't pretend like it's not there. We must deal with it in all of those platitudes. And he's right in that sense. But then he says, we cannot continue what we were doing. But to any informed observer, that's the biggest laugh of all, because that is exactly what the present administration is doing. They are continuing what they were doing, except they're accelerating it somewhat. So there's no change in direction. It's always headed toward that waterfall. And yes, you're quite right. They're saying you got to go over the waterfall because you can't stay where you are. Well, that's not much of a choice, is it?
No, it's not. And on both sides of us are the Republic, beautiful fields, forest. You know, we could build our civilization back if we had the engine of liberty. But instead, they're saying, oh, no, don't get out of the boat. Just keep going over the waterfall. Everything is going to be fine, but we know it's not going to be fine. We know that's a 1,000-foot drop down to those rocks below. We know that hundreds of other civilizations have gone over these falls, haven't they?
Oh, yes, they have. And I guess it's time to abandon the analogy, because actually when the people who are calling the shots today, they don't like the rowboat we're in. That rowboat provides way too much stability for people in them, and they really want that rowboat destroyed. They want the people in the water. They want the people, clamoring for life rings or lifesavers that the government will throw out to them, because they want the people out of those boats and into the water. And that's the reality.
Because they're sharks. The banks, in their own documents, want vertical integration. As Maurice Strong said, they want to wreck the economy so we all go on collectivist welfare, so they can call the shots on everything.
Exactly. They're power freaks, and that's how they get their jollies, and that's it. It's the only trick they know. They're collectivists. They believe in that ideology of collectivism with all-powerful government at the top and people serving the state at the bottom. And that's just fine with them, because they know that they're in the structure either at the top or far enough toward the top to have a very comfortable life, while the rest of us are servants. So it's as simple as that. And the trouble is, with most Americans, they can't imagine that there are people out there with that kind of a vision, because it's not their vision. They think there is no one that actually wants to rule the world, but they're so wrong.
History shows that elites always want to rule the world. They always dominate. They always enslave. But somehow this psychological idea got implanted that corruption doesn't exist in government.
was a highwayman. Along the coach roads I did ride, with sword and pistol by my side. Many a young maid lost her baubles to my trade. Many a soldier shed his lifeblood on my blade. The bastards hung me in the spring of 25, but I am still alive.
G. Edward Griffin is our guest. Short segment, long segment coming up. We're going to break down what's happening currently. But G. Edward, in this brief five-minute segment, can you give people an overview of, say, Norman Dodd and the Reese Committee, the Church Committee, Carol Quigley, the documents from the elite, similar to more modern ones like Eco-Science, written by the White House science czar, where they admit planetary government. And then now Ban Ki-moon, Secretary General 2 weeks ago, editorial in the New York Times titled, "We Can Do It," saying global government is here and it's going to be funded by carbon taxes. We'll talk about that coming up. But a few founding documents for people that want to do research.
Yeah, I think that's important to get as close to the roots of this as possible. Of course, you can go back practically to Adam and Eve if you want to, but you don't need to go that far. One of the most eye-opening documents that I discovered early in my research, Alex, was the testimony of a fellow by the name of Norman Dodd. Norman Dodd, this was in the 1940s, right after the end of World War II. There was a lot of concern among a lot of Americans, and particularly some newspaper editors. The Hearst newspaper chain in particular was very concerned in writing editorials about the tax-exempt foundations in America, obviously promoting what was in those days blatant communist propaganda. I found that hard to believe when I read those editorials. But I went to the documents themselves from the tax-exempt foundations, and lo and behold, they were right. They were publishing essays written by, guess who? Joseph Stalin, praising the glories of communism and socialism and how the end of capitalism was the only way for the world to go and so forth. This was stuff being distributed by some of the largest, most prestigious American tax-exempt foundations. And it was just amazing, because it was hard for me to believe that would happen, but there it was in the historical record. And so the Hearst papers and others, a lot of newspapers around the country, were writing editorials exposing this. And, of course, that triggered a lot of alarm on the part of the American people. And they wanted their government, people in those days like today still thought that their government, you know, represented them. And so they wanted their government to investigate this, not realizing that already, even in those days, our own government was being heavily influenced by tax-exempt foundations and the financial interests that supported them. But anyway, the idea was that they wanted an investigation of these tax-exempt foundations to see if they were, in fact, un-American, is the word they used, that they were advocating systems that required the destruction of the American way of life and using a process that was not constitutional. I mean, the American system is designed to be changed if necessary, and if it's the will of the people, but there's a constitutional path for that change. And so they were concerned about groups such as the Communist Party in those days pursuing an unconstitutional path through a violent revolution and that sort of thing. So there was a committee established in Congress, headed by Congressman Carol Reese. And I've forgotten the exact title of the committee. It's a long title, but they just referred to it as the Reese Committee, and its purpose was to investigate tax-exempt foundations. Well, that's just background. They hired a fellow by the name of Norman Dodd to be their chief investigator. And Norman Dodd was he came from banking circles, actually. Excuse me. He had worked for some of the largest banks of New York. He knew how the power structure worked and all of that, and he was not very happy with it, as a matter of fact. He had left banking, and, we won't go through his career, but eventually they did select him to be the chief investigator. So now we finally get to the Norman Dodd testimony, which I ran across, I guess in the middle 1960s, when I was researching a lot of the government documents put out by the House Committee on Un-American Activities and the Senate Internal Security Subcommittee. And one of those obscure documents, and believe me, I had stacks of these things that probably, if they were all put on top of each other, would probably go 8 feet to the ceiling of the house here. And one of those obscure documents, I ran across the testimony of Norman Dodd, and it almost knocked my socks off. He was basically saying that when he investigated these tax-exempt foundations, he found out that there was nestled inside of them literally a cabal of people, very powerful, wealthy people, who were trying to destroy America.
Stay there. We'll be right back. I want to tell you about a couple of our sponsors, and we're going right back to G. Edward Griffin. He's really an archaeologist, going back into the congressional record, going into the foundation's own records, and showing you the embryonic development of what has grown into this monster today. That's coming up in one moment. I want to tell you about EcuadorCentral.com. You know the country Ecuador? EcuadorCentral.com. It's your duty to know every option you have to protect you and your family, whether you're looking for a rental property, a new start, or you just want to know your options. I urge you to go to EcuadorCentral.com. The website is great. I will give you all the information you want to know before you go. They will give it to you at EcuadorCentral.com. Go there and see what folks are doing. Whether you are interested in real estate investment, travel, or just want to see pictures and videos, go to EcuadorCentral.com. That's EcuadorCentral.com. Also, MySolarBackup.com. A lot of things can cut off your electrical power, hurricanes, snow, ice storms. Listeners should move towards getting off the grid. And here's a good way to do just that. A solar power generator is now available from our longtime sponsor, Solutions from Science. You get an emergency power backup kit, which consists of the power source 800-watt generator and a high-efficiency solar panel designed to provide endless electricity. Remember, too, that gas generators need gas. But in a blackout, gas pumps can't pump gas because they run on electricity. It's the perfect emergency backup for troubled times. The government doesn't own the sun yet, folks, so make your move now. Go to MySolarBackup.com. That's MySolarBackup.com. Or give them a call toll-free at 877-327-0365. MySolarBackup.com. Okay, G. Edward, you're getting into the Reese Committee, reading the testimony of Norman Dodd, this high-powered investigator hired by Congress. You have the actual foundation documents that we know of as the Carnegie Foundation, the Rockefeller Foundation, later the Ford Foundation. They're now quite public about all this, and I want you to go through the testimony first and then into modern times, but here's a microcosm example. Eco-barons lead the way. Times of London today. And it says the global rich are going green as never before. The first Sunday Times Green Rich List shows that enthusiasm among the world's wealthiest for investments in areas as diverse as electric cars, solar power, and geothermal energy is unaffected by recession. So they always say, oh, it's about better cars and things that sound reasonable. But when you actually read the minutes of these meetings that have been covered by the media, it's population control. How do we shut off the resources? How do we destroy the industrial society? How do we bring back a neo-feudal type of serfdom to control everyone? And here's another Times of London. Billionaire club in bid to curb overpopulation. America's richest people meet to discuss ways of tackling disastrous environmental, social, and industrial threats. And at the end of the article, it says the Rockefeller Foundation put it on at Rockefeller University. It was secret, but they told the Times some of what happened. And they said, why all the secrecy? They wanted to speak rich to rich without worrying anything they could and said would end up in the newspapers, painting them as an alternative world government, he said, because this meeting went on a week before Bilderberg this year. Now, you then see the Rockefeller Foundation as the nexus or the directorship, and you're the expert on this, I'm just telling the listeners about it, of all the new carbon tax laws where they decide who can have a business, where they decide what gets developed, what governments fund. This is the private banking cartel through government power in a tyrannical fashion taking complete control over society. Please continue.
Yes, well, boy, there's so much on that, and it all, as you said earlier, it goes back to the earliest beginnings, of which I'm aware, where they actually talked about these strategies, was when the tax-exempt foundations amassed tremendous amounts of financial firepower. I mean, we're talking about, as you mentioned, the Carnegie Endowment Fund for International Peace, the Rockefeller Foundation Fund, the Ford Foundation. People cannot imagine the tremendous amount of money that these tax-exempt foundations have in their bank accounts and invested in producing constant flow of money. And they use it, the general impression is that they use it for philanthropic purposes. But now we're talking about Norman Dodd, who started to investigate these organizations and found out that under the name of, or the cover of philanthropy, they were actually doing social engineering, and they were doing a government change, and they were trying to change the characteristic of the American society. And that was quite astounding. And when I read this testimony, I just found it almost impossible to believe. And so I was traveling in those days back to Virginia, and we had hired a television crew, and we were putting together a little documentary on some topic. It wasn't this at all. I've even forgotten the topic at the present time. But I do know that we had a weekend where we had no appointments and no interviews. And so I decided to see if I could locate Norman Dodd, because I knew the last reference I had, they said he lived in Virginia someplace. And so I just opened up the telephone directory and started to look through to see if I could find how many Norman Dodds there were. There were only about three. And so I decided to call the first one on the list, and it was him. It was almost incredible. Good luck. I said, "Mr. Dodd, are you the same one who was the investigator for the Reese Committee?" He said, "Yes, that is I." And I said, "Well, how wonderful. I'm here. I have a camera crew, and I'm interested in your testimony. Would you like to speak for our cameras?" He said, "Well, of course, young man, of course." This is many years ago. And so we got him over to where we were staying, and I actually captured his whole story on videotape. And it was a good thing, because by that time he was advanced in years, and he was not very well at all, and it wasn't, I think it was less than a year later that he passed away. So we were fortunate enough to get his testimony again, this time spoken to our cameras, and I had a chance to question him. So I became very, very personally familiar with his story, and I might say that if anybody is interested in this, you can find the complete description of what he said, and you can find even a reference to the film, the documentary film, which we produced based on his testimony, which is called The Hidden Agenda. And you can find all of that on our website. In fact, since we're talking about documents, I think a good reference point would be to come to the Freedom Force website. That's freedomforceinternational.org. And when you get there to the landing page, you'll see across the top a subsection called The Issues. And if you'll just navigate to the issues, and at the bottom of that page, you'll see a series of essays and references, which include almost all of the documents that we're talking about, Alex, including the Norman Dodd testimony.
Absolutely. And people can also Google Norman Dodd, and the video is out on the web, but it's all the key info is there at the Freedom Force website. We'll give that all out before you leave us again as well. We also have Carol Quigley, and I want to speak some about that and then get into what's currently happening as we come down to the end game, and suddenly they go from denying their plans that they were building behind the curtains. Now they're launching this war mock, this juggernaut against it, so they've unveiled it, and they are pushing it and telling everybody how great it is and how wonderful it is and how fantastic it is. So let's discuss terms here, because we start talking about a communist conspiracy, people think it's a bunch of guys in black uniforms running around in Russia 100 years ago. Can you explain to people why the ultra rich always fund wealth transferring programs and always bill it and paint it and package it as if it's a revolution of the people, and why ultra rich make their wealth and keep their wealth and expand their wealth through monopolies, through collectivist governments in all their forms? Because people go, communism, why are the rich funding it? You know, why do the rich love communist China so much? Explain that to people.
Yeah, it's really looking at the wrong place if you're asking why the super rich are collectivists or gravitate into government. It's they're really the rich aspect of their characteristics is not the main thing. It's they're power mad people. And money is one of the most important levers of power. And so power mad people, these control freaks, the predator class, in different ways of saying the same thing, they will gravitate toward any mechanism of power. Well, that's government, isn't it? If you can control the levers of governmental power, you can really control the population, and you can have all the money. So it's kind of a it's a merger, and they can pretend to be collectivists on the left or collectivists on the right. It makes no difference. Right and left wings are merely two wings of the same ugly bird, which is collectivism. And like any wings on a bird, they'll flap against each other in order to fly. You need both wings to fly, so there's the appearance of conflict, so that, politically speaking, all the dum-dums down at the bottom of this mechanism think that they're, you know, participating in their own political destiny because they can go to the polls and they can vote the rascals out and vote Republican this time. Oh, we don't like that. We'll go vote Democrat the next time. And the two wings beat against each other and the bird flies. And so that's true not only in our country, but it's true around the world. And it's true through much of modern history that the conflict, that the big major conflicts of the world, of which we're familiar, World War I, World War II, and the conflict that goes on today, which I would call World War III, it's now going on, is a conflict to a large extent between two branches of world collectivism.
Okay, we had our customary phone drop, so we're going to get G. Edward Griffin back on. In fact, let's just have Genesis do it. Give Genesis his phone number, and we'll just go with the Genesis phone system and test that out that way. Again, G. Edward Griffin is our guest today. And while we're getting G. Edward Griffin back on the line, again, I'll just point out that he is in the film Fall of the Republic. Fall of the Republic, America's Last Stand, Make the Choice, Liberty or Tyranny. Fall of the Republic documents how an offshore corporate cartel is bankrupting the U.S. economy by design. Leaders are now declaring that world government has arrived and that the dollar will be replaced with a new global currency. President Obama has brazenly violated Article 1, Section 9 of the U.S. Constitution by seating himself at the head of the United Nations Security Council, thus becoming the first U.S. president to chair the world body. A sign of a dictatorship is in its final stages of completion, and laws protecting basic human rights are now being abolished worldwide. An iron curtain of high-tech tyranny is now descending over the planet. A worldwide regime controlled by an unelected corporate elite is implementing a planetary carbon tax system that will dominate all human activity and establish a system of neo-feudal slavery. The image makers have carefully packaged Obama as the world's savior. He is the Trojan horse manufactured to pacify the people just long enough for the globalists to complete their master plan. The film reveals the architecture of the New World Order and what the power elite have in store for humanity. More importantly, it communicates how we the people can retake our government, turn the criminal tide, and bring the tyrants to justice. Fall of the Republic, available on DVD at InfoWars.com. Okay, going back to G. Edward Griffin, our line drop to you. Continue where you left off, sir.
Yeah, I don't know what happened. All of a sudden, I was talking to a dead phone. But anyway, it was probably the universe speaking to me because I realized I was digressing from your initial question, which is why do these people always, gravitate toward government? And the word that was used was the super rich or the very rich. Well, actually, you know, in the beginning of this country, America surpassed the rest of the world through a very simple principle. It's called free enterprise competition. And under those conditions, people compete. They produce the best product and service they possibly can at the lowest possible price. And this leads to great systems of efficiency and productivity. And that, in my view, is what made America so great, because we came from a virtual wilderness. Europe was already far ahead of us, but we bypassed Europe because of free enterprise competition. Well, then about toward the end of the 1800s, these very wealthy people who had become the captains of industry, as they like to call them, you know, the Rockefellers and the Carnegies and so forth, had already reached great fortunes, acquired great fortunes, and decided that competition was no longer in their best interest. And they began to look for ways to eliminate competition. In fact, John D. Rockefeller said it best. He's quoted by all of his biographers. He said, "Competition is a sin." Well, of course, it's a sin if you're at the top of the pyramid and you don't want anybody competing with you because you're already in first place. Then you say competition is a sin. And from that period of history, about the 1880s on, there was a rather substantial and rapid change in the way Americans did business. Instead of free enterprise competition, they began to coalesce into cartels and form monopolies and to go into partnership with government to pass laws, always in the name of protecting the people, but laws which in reality eliminated competition and was able to throw competitive advantage in the direction of those with political influence. And so we saw a change in the way people became rich. It used to be they became rich by competing and by producing goods and services. And then by the 1900s, they became rich by not competing and instead using their prowess and their expertise to buy politicians, to create laws that would eliminate their competition and give them unfair advantage. And so that
that's how we see the big bankers publicly funding fascism and communism, now declassified, that Hitler and Mussolini were MI5 and were basically set up. I mean, this is the sophistication of the Milner Group and this British model, this imperial model of hiding your true government behind front men. And so elites can come in and have the government give them the power to issue currency and credit, then buy up the planet. But still, some people don't want to sell. So now you pass big environmental laws, which the Rockefellers admit they founded, which they also founded the worldwide acceptance of eugenics. Over 100 years ago, as you know, the rock stars were scientists. And these elites were smart. They financed most of the scientists. And they said, come up with systems of social control to divide and conquer people, to dumb them down, to take over government, to centralize control, to take over education, to render the public weak and impotent against us. As Bertrand Russell said, through social engineering that the elite finance, in his own words, a rebellion by the lower classes, or the proles, as he called us, using communist terminology, though he worked for the big money banks and was MI6 himself and OSS before that, Nobel Prize winner. He said, a rebellion by the proles will be as unthinkable as a rebellion of sheep against the practice of eating mutton, or sheep is what mutton means for those that don't know. So they're saying we're blind, dumb sheep, that sheep don't rebel against their owner when they're getting slaughtered, do they, G. Edward?
Well, no, and cattle don't, and a lot of all those domesticated animals don't, and now we're back to Norman Dodd, because what he discovered when he was talking with the heads of these tax-exempt foundations is that they were laying a master plan which was had as its goal how to make the population of America docile, like cattle and sheep, and how to get them to accept all of these things without complaining. And the strategy they came up with was absolutely brilliant.
Stay there. We're going to talk about that strategy on the other side, then bring it forward to current times and then the future with G. Edward Griffin. I'm Alex Jones. This is the GCN Radio Network. Edward Griffin is our guest with us until about 45 minutes into the next hour. Your phone calls are coming up. Okay, G. Edward, you got to the point of domestication. And literally, we have hundreds of textbooks, thousands of white papers, congressional reports, the foundations themselves, scientific dictatorship, global government to carry out a global police state. That's their quotes, to force one-child policy, sterilization, eugenics. Mainstream news reporting, the elite are obsessed with this. These are very, very greedy people. They want the life extension technologies. They want the cancer cures for themselves. They want total control. They want it now. So now Al Gore admits his new movie's about how it's a religion, how the environment's a religion. They always plan to have the UN religion. It's all now happening. Please continue.
Well, yes, and just before the break, we were talking about the strategy, the fact that this is not an accident. This is not new. This is the foundation for this was laid in strategic form, well, at the turn of the last century. But we were talking about Norman Dodd. I keep coming back to him because I think there's so much to be learned from his testimony. And basically, when he went in, he talked to the head of the Ford Foundation. There's a guy by the name of Gaither, I think was his name. And he said, Mr. Gaither, I would like very much to know what you folks are doing here. And he said, without any hesitation, Gaither said, well, Mr. Dodd, I can tell you exactly what we're doing here. He said, we are putting our resources to work so as to change the United States of America so it can be comfortably merged with the Soviet Union. Those were his exact words. And Dodd said he almost fell off of his chair when he heard that. And he said it wasn't just the Soviet Union. It wasn't that it was communism that they wanted. But the fact was if you could merge the United States with the Soviet Union, which was at the opposite end, people thought, of the political spectrum, well, you could merge it with any nation. And that was the real goal because they were trying to set up a merger process in which the United States would be merged with the Soviet Union, Red China, France, England, Germany, you know, the world. And he said, well, how can you do that? And he got the answer when he visited the offices of the Carnegie Endowment Fund for International Peace. He said, you can take a look at our minute books. And you can see what we do here. And the answer came, here's the answer, the strategy that I'm finally building to. They said, the American people will never surrender their affinity to their legal system, their customs, their traditions, you know, none of that. The people are in America are different, and they'll never give up any of that unless they're frightened into it. If they thought that it was necessary in order to survive, then they will give up everything because survival is the most basic instinct of all human beings. And so, therefore, if you're going to change life in the United States so it can be comfortably merged with the Soviet Union and any other totalitarian system in the world, you must make the United States a totalitarian system. And the way to do that is to scare the people by getting them embroiled into wars. And this is the amazing part. The Carnegie Endowment Fund for Peace then plotted to get the United States into World War I and to prolong it. And they said, if you can get the American people into war and be afraid of their survival, they will accept a totalitarian government.
So let's be clear. It is on record, in the congressional record, the foundations admit they started World War I and World War II to get the UN and the world government. They are the warmongers. Into the fourth and final hour, G. Edward Griffin is our guest. Thank you for joining us. He's breaking down the embryonic development of this world government that is to be captained and controlled and piloted by a handful of ultra-rich elite families intermarried with the royalty of Europe. The Rothschilds, the Rockefellers, all the usual names. And you could ignore G. Edward Griffin 30, 40, 50 years ago when he had all the documents. People could say, oh, you know, I'm not going to look at those. But now it's openly being announced. G. Edward Griffin, please continue, and then let's get into why they're now announcing it, what that means in the current situation. What does it signify that they're now emerging and admitting that it's going to be a private world government that has complete control over every facet of our lives, no Bill of Rights, no Constitution, no parental rights, children to be raised in government dormitories. I mean, just hell is being announced.
Well, my initial reaction to that question is not a very optimistic reaction. I think, honestly, that they feel that it's so close now that you you need to talk about it and condition the American mind into accepting it as a reality. There comes a point when you say, hey, here it is. Get used to it. And I think they've come to that phase in the historical development that they're telling us just to get used to it. Also, I think it's partly because after all of these years, very few people are indignant about it anymore. I mean, there was a time 20, 30, 40 years ago when the mere mention of what's happening today as a possibility, you'd probably not just be laughed down, but you'd probably be you'd be squirted with tars and feathers because it would sound like you were speaking against America. You know, people did not want to hear that. That's absurd. That's not considerate, and so forth. Well, now people say, "Oh, yeah. Well, we all know that. Yeah. Well, we've had to give up our freedom in order to protect ourselves against the Nazis in World War II, and now we've had to give up more freedom to protect ourselves against the terrorists in World War III. And yes, we have to give up our freedom to protect ourselves against swine flu, and we have to give up our freedom in order to protect ourselves against an economic collapse." And all that formula that they talked about in those days keeps coming to haunt us. Is that everybody is afraid of this, that, and the other thing, and they, each time they think about their fear, they give up more freedom, and so now they're kind of conditioned to this idea. Well, yeah, we did that. That was, we did it consciously, and here we are, and now what's next? I think more people are more concerned today with knowing what's next than being indignant about what's now.
There's a capitulation, a broke-backed just giving in to whatever happens and really going along with it. But there is a larger and larger minority that is awake and is upset. But going back to what you said before the break, that in their own documents, and I had a high school teacher that talked about this, in their own Carnegie documents, clearly that's the one of the central foundations, the center of the spoke with the Rockefeller Foundation. From all my research, you can add to that if you'd like. But that they created these wars and financed the boogeymen, the Saddam Husseins, the Bin Ladens, the Hitlers, the Mussolinis, the Lenins. And it's in mainline history, but just not popularly advertised, that this is what they did. And now they're making humanity the enemy, as the CFR and Club of Rome documents have stated in the last 10 years. They openly admit the environmental movement's fake. They openly admit that that's a pretext to make everyone an enemy, everyone someone bad that the government has to come after, and that terrorism makes everyone a potential enemy, and the flu, anyone could have it. So, I mean, this is tyranny. This is how America dies.
Well, there's no question about it. I guess I haven't seen them openly admit this so much, but they certainly are talking about it as though it's a fait accompli. It's already here, so we don't have to sell anybody on the idea. Hey, it's already happened, folks. You know, get used to it. I think.
What do you mean you don't see them openly? I mean, CFR reports, Ban Ki-moon in the New York Times 2 weeks ago saying global government, Al Gore saying global government, saying that the IMF will be the new bank of the world we pay carbon taxes to?
Oh, no, I see that. But what I don't see is them admitting that they're using deceit and trickery. They're still keeping that pretty much under wraps.
Big Brother. Mainstream media. Government cover-ups. You want answers? Well, so does he. He's Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network. And now, live from Austin, Texas, Alex Jones.
G. Edward, I want to start taking calls in the next segment and also get into solutions with you, but you've got the floor. Break down their system of crisis creation, what's currently happening with the carbon tax, the government health care, the banks. It's come out even in McClatchy News Service that Goldman Sachs imploded the housing market on purpose, engineered it to destroy their competition, to get the bailouts and hoard the money. Goldman Sachs, of course, is the inner group that pilots the Federal Reserve System and that also holds the federal regulatory positions in almost every agency, 2, 3, 4 deep. And where we're going with this system, what the world is going to look like in a decade, 20 years, if they succeed from the research. So what they're doing currently, and then what the world will look like if they succeed G. Edward Griffin, you've got the floor all the way out to the next break.
Well, that's quite a topic. As a matter of fact, I've started to put a series of seminars on the road, Alex, called A Crash Course on Money. And before I forget it, we just decided the other evening to come to Austin on December 12th. So we'll talk about that later. But anyway, the Crash Course on Money is a full-day seminar, and I devoted a lot of time to answering just the question that you've raised, where are we going and what can we do about it? Well, in a nutshell, anybody that listens to your program has got a pretty good idea. We're going to a complete command economy where the free market, what's left of it today, will be completely dead. I'm not predicting that this must happen. I'm saying that if there are no changes, if we continue going in the direction that we're headed, we're going to reach where we're headed, that's all. And we're headed right toward a command economy. That's no different substantially than the command economy of the old Soviet Union or the Red China or any of the or Nazi Germany. And in other words, prices are will be completely controlled. Employment will be completely controlled. You know, your complete dependence for your food, your shelter, your health care, your education, everything that's important will be provided and regulated by the masters in Washington, D.C., and people will be grateful or told they're supposed to be grateful to be taken care of. And in return for that, of course, they must be very good boys and girls and do exactly as they're told. Otherwise, they'll be cut off and they won't have that food, shelter and health care and all of that sort of thing. It's a very dismal picture. It's a high-tech feudalism. And it's definitely in our future and not our distant future, I might say, if things continue as they are. So what can you do about that? Well, there's nothing you can do about it except to change the direction that we're headed. You can't just say, well, what should we invest in? You know, that might help a little bit. It might get you a few weeks or months down the line with a little bit of independence. But when the jackboots show up and say, into the truck, that's the end of the line, investments or not. So we got to change the system. And, of course, I'm always talking about Freedom Force International when I start thinking about changing the system, recapturing the system. But how can you protect yourself in the meantime? There's a short-term view and a long-term view. People are naturally concerned about that short-term view. And, you know, you've got a lot of your sponsors on your program that I think have excellent solutions for short-term survival, if you will. Sure, we ought to have food. We ought to have good drinking water, ought to have power, electrical power at our disposal. We ought to have gold and silver, something that will be readily accepted by almost everybody when it comes time to replace the electronic money system that probably will be completely collapsed at one point. And so, yeah, those are things you can do for the short term. But the long term, the only thing that will work is to recapture the system. And then we start, and in the seminar, we'll be talking about this thing of revolution versus revolt. And that's quite an interesting topic because I don't think many people have considered the difference. There's a rising energy for resistance today. People are angry, and that television, or the, I guess it's not television, it was a movie, I can't think of the name of it, Network, I guess it was. The guy says, you know, we're mad as hell and we ain't going to take it no more, or whatever he says. Well, that's the kind of the mood of the American people. We're mad, we're not going to take it anymore. But the idea that you just get mad and not take it anymore is going to make a difference? No, they don't care about that. The elitists have been anticipating years in advance for some kind of an uprising. They've been building FEMA camps for that. They've been equipping the local police in crowd control, and they've been developing weapons specifically for demonstrators and crowds of people and rioters and so forth. They know it's coming, and in my opinion, I think they want it to come, which is a frightening thing, because I think they want people out making all of this ruckus so they can have a good excuse to institute martial law and round up everybody, including those who aren't even on the streets, people who maybe are sitting in their radio studios doing talk shows. And so I think they want that kind of violence. But One of the things we'll be talking about is the difference between a revolt and a revolution. Basically, it's this. Revolts are just an uprising of people with no leadership, no strategy, no goal, no organization, no funding, no communications, just a bunch of people that say, I've had it, and I'm not going to take it anymore. And they wind up in the streets with rocks and stones and sticks or whatever they've got. And it'd be like the Hungarian Revolt back in the 60s. Revolts never work. They may be successful for a day or two, create a lot of euphoria on the part of the participants because they're able to face down established military control merely with their sheer numbers. But after a little while, it dissipates. It goes away. They don't have resources. They don't have food. They don't have water. They don't have leadership, communications, and all those things, and the revolt gradually just dissipates, and no revolt of history has ever been successful in the long run. Revolutions, on the other hand, often are successful, but that's because they're quite different from revolts. They have all of the things that revolts don't have. They do have leadership and strategy and financing and communications, and especially they have military training and military units already in place. It's quite different. And all you need to do is take a look at the American Revolution, and you can see immediately that that was not a revolt. That was a revolution. We had 13 governments that came together. They were complete governments. They had their leadership. They had taxes. They had courts. They had representation. They had military units. They had armories with ammunition. They had training, military training and discipline, and 13 governments came together and unified and stood up against the government of the Crown of England. Had they just been farmers with pitchforks or muskets, there's no way in the world they could have successfully stood up against King George. But they were organized, and so they really created a revolution. So now we look at today and all these people running around say, well, it's about time to have a revolution. They have no idea what they're talking about. And if you listen to those people, I think it's going to be a great tragedy for the Americans who fall for it. It'll be one of the greatest bloodbaths of all history, I'm afraid.
Well, G. Edward, we see the provocateurs online with websites and commenting. We can track who they are. In many cases, it comes out later, they were FBI informants. They're always calling for shooting and killing and war. And they always go around saying, Alex Jones is a coward. He's not calling for killing cops and military. And I say, that person's got to be a Fed or they'd be arrested. And then years later, it comes out, they're all Feds on record in court. It's just unbelievable. That's why the federal government stages terror attacks like Oklahoma City and 9/11. They need to make themselves the victims. They need to have offensive attacks against themselves to have the illusion that they're not the aggressor, because in common sense humanity, people know that an aggressor is the person that is in the wrong. And yeah. So as we expand down this road, it's obvious. Anybody saying, you're a coward, you're not calling for violence, you notice they're not marching out and carrying out the violence. Now, that doesn't mean that we don't defensively protect ourselves, and the Second Amendment is something that's been holding back the tyranny because they know it would go badly for them if they go on the offensive against us. So the question for the controllers is, how do they go on the offensive against the people of the world without looking like the aggressors? And so that's why they use terrorism and the environment and all these systems that make the individual bad and that colors everyone as a potential bad guy. And the airports, TSA admits, that's training for nationwide on the streets and schools and at the colleges and at the hospitals and the shopping malls, where we're all searched and randomly lined up on the side of the street and put through body scanners. England's about 5 years ahead of us, as you know, and they're doing the exact same thing. They are bringing in tyranny. They're saying parents have to have a license to have kids and be with them in public to prove they're not pedophiles. 20,000 homes with newborn babies have cameras in the homes watching them to make sure they're good parents, guilty until proven innocent. And when I ask you about their future operation, I've read their documents. I know what their future operation is if they win. I just wanted your perspective and view on that, because they say They're going to raise people outside the home. First, it'll start with year-round school. Then they'll come and assess your home and say, you don't have enough money to have kids. Your kids will now live in a government facility, not just kids that the CPS grabs, but everybody's children. How will they take the middle class's money? Through property tax. How are they going to break us down incrementally till we're fully institutionalized, all of us prisoners? That was the point I wanted you to get into.
Yeah, well, it sounds like a little music in the background there, meaning the end of the session.
The end of this segment. We're going to come right back and get your take on that and then take phone calls when we come back. I might just twist G. Edward Griffin to stay the whole rest of the hour because time is moving so quickly with our guest today. He's going to be speaking in several cities. We'll tell you about that before he leaves as well. Your chance to meet the legend, G. Edward Griffin. I'm Alex Jones. Griffin is our guest. Your phone call is coming up in the next segment at 1-800-259-9231. This scientific dictatorship, the final revolution, as the elites have called it, is a scientific tyranny based on psychology, anthropology, human activity, public relations, propaganda, to bring in this tyranny. World government is only the beginning. What comes once they have their world government? Because you talk about them running our lives and providing everything. You mean providing euthanasia? You mean providing execution? You mean providing starvation? Their end game, once they have their global straitjacket in place, which they're putting the final tweaks on right now, what comes next from your research, G. Edward Griffin?
My opinion, Alex, is that we have a gravitation into this power center, this huge concentration of power now globally. We have a gravitation in there of the greatest criminal minds of the planet at the moment. This is the predator class attracted to that power. These are the people running the show who, outside of government, would probably be on death row. They'd certainly be in prison because they'd be committing all of the most horrendous crimes against their fellow man that you can imagine. But they've gone into government so that they can be the ones who put other people in prison. And it's as simple as that. We're looking at the formation of a huge criminal syndicate. And so if you understand the mentality of the criminal mind, then you can see what it is they have planned. What do criminals do? They want to exploit everybody else. They want to make them serve them. They want to take everything of value from them. It's that simple. I think that in some cases, these people may have started out with some idealism because they thought that, collectivism was a good idea, because they thought that would put an end to war. But very simply and very quickly, they understood that in order to bring collectivism into fruition around the world, they have to have wars. And they become the greatest instigators of wars. And all the injustices that they claim that they want to correct, they become the instigators of those injustices. So I think soon they become very calloused to the human condition. And it just boils down to a position of who's got the power and who will rule and who will serve. So use your imagination. You can see the ultimate servitude coming in the future, where people will be nothing but little ciphers, and they will completely serve their masters, and if they don't serve well, they will be exterminated. It's that simple.
Absolutely. G. Edward Griffin, expanding on that, for people that don't understand the grave danger we're in, isn't tyranny what we see 99% of the time in history? Black uniforms, mass arrests, death, poverty. The elites love to sit up on their pleasure mountains in their palaces with all their power and sex and wars. It's all about their power trip and everyone else toiling under poverty. The globalists admit in many of their own statements they use poverty as a weapon to suppress people, and they enjoy riding past in their armored chariots the rotting hovels and starving children. To them, children with snot all over their faces, with their rib cages sticking out, is beautiful because that makes their feathered beds and their servants that much more enjoyable.
You know, Alex, years ago, I came across a quotation from Lenin that addressed this issue, and Lenin was answering the question, do they have bread lines in Russia, in the Soviet Union in those days? He said, of course we have bread lines. And he said, let me tell you why. He said, when we have bread lines, there is scarcity. And scarcity is good for a system like ours because people have to get in line to get their food. And if they're in line, they don't have a lot of time to become politically active. They don't have a lot of time to organize against the state. And if the lines are very long, then you have to have policemen to keep order in the lines. And people become desperate, and they become very controllable. And he said, with long lines and shortages, therefore, the state can determine who gets fed and who does not. And so scarcity becomes an objective of these collectivist systems.
And that's why they want everyone in the world on a carbon credit ration card. You slide, and when you go past your credits, no more food, even if you have the money to buy it. That is inches away from being law in California and England. G. Edward Griffin is our guest. Thank you so much for joining us, and he's a big part of Fall of the Republic. We're going to take some phone calls now in the 10 minutes or so we have left with him. Jim, Ken, Jason, Kevin, Mark, we'll get to your calls at least. But G. Edward Griffin, tell us about some of the other speaking engagements you have coming up around the country and where people can find out more.
Well, the big emphasis right now is the crash course on money that I mentioned before. And my next one is scheduled on November 21st in New York. And then after that, December 5 in Seattle, and then December 12 in Austin. And we'll have one in Toronto and one in Chicago after that, but they're not scheduled yet. And so if anybody's interested in hearing my views for a whole day on where we're headed and what to do about it, I urge you to come to our Reality Zone site and check out the seminar page. That's realityzone.com. You go to the landing page and you'll see my picture there, and that's the doorway into the seminar information. So that's taken a lot of my time, Alex, and I'm happy to report that the two seminars we've had so far, one in Los Angeles and one in Atlanta last weekend, are highly successful. And people have told me that they had their expectations completely fulfilled, which makes me feel good about it.
Oh, you're a very powerful lecturer. It's even more powerful than on the radio because you can really flow. I want to go to some calls here in the last segment we have with you. But to put a positive light on this, because I truly do believe that some positive things are happening, G. Edward Griffin, we are seeing an exponential awakening, and the globalists denying they were building this in the past, it's really handicapping them now that they're having to admit it. And I know they're not invincible, and if people will take action at the local, county, city, congressional level and really get involved, we can stop them. And our message of liberty and our message against collectivism is really spreading. And the globalists in a lot of their own publications, as I know you're aware, are really starting to complain and say that we better hurry up and finish this because the opposition is really starting to mount.
Yeah, they're scared to death of the size of the opposition. They've always known there would be a lot of it, but I think the size of it is surprising to them. And, of course, the Internet and talk radio are two of the main channels by which this movement is growing, and they're really focusing hard on those two areas. They would like to close you down, and they'd like to close down the Internet as soon as possible. So our little window of opportunity is not so big, but it's still open. And I agree with you. We can still do it, but we better get busy.
You know, that's an amazing admission. Jay Rockefeller in the Senate committee saying we would have been better off without the internet. Having Obama come out and say the NSA is taking over the web. We may have to shut it off to save it during emergencies. They're really setting the stage to control the internet and shut it down and tax it and regulate it. Things are moving very quickly, and they wouldn't be getting ready to shut it off and starting to broach the subject if it wasn't hurting them. Jim in Illinois, you're on the air with G. Edward Griffin. Go ahead.
Hey, guys. How's it going? Thanks for everything you do. I just had a couple comments kind of expanding on what you're talking about. Just more like I think there might be a couple things that could at least slow them down a little. And, you know, if we could maybe audit the Fed, get that moving, if we could get any kind of 9/11 truth going. And, you know, if there was any possible way to get our soldiers back home, I think all that, any one of those would slow them down big time. But then one other thing, if you guys could kind of expand on, you know, you've been fighting the system so long that, like, you know, at the rate it's growing, do you think by, like, the next generation we'll just overwhelm them with how many people understand liberty and what really comes with that?
I like the concept of the next generation. I think that by the next generation, and certainly the one after that, victory will be ours. But I don't think it'll be because of just overwhelming them with numbers. I think it'll be because that out of those who do understand the issues, that a small number of those people, 3% or less, will move and take control of the system. They will recapture control of the power centers of society and lead the rest of the people. I don't think it's going to be just the sheer force of numbers, although that is necessary in order to provide the moral support.
Sure. G. Edward, the biggest issue is exposure. If we person by person expose the global architecture so people know what they're seeing, understand what they're dealing with, this thing will implode. Thank you, Jim. Ken in New York, you're on the air with G. Edward Griffin. Go ahead.
Hey, Alex. I just have some questions about the H.R. 1207. I'm just wondering why this bill, I mean, it has 311 co-sponsors. Why haven't we heard about anything that's about in the mainstream media? I mean, Fox News has...
Because the mainstream media is owned by the same banks that don't want to be audited. Ron Paul has over 309 sponsors. The Senate gutted the bill, but we've gone from no sponsors to 300. Now people are beginning to realize the real government is the Federal Reserve, so the beginning of the end has begun. We've made more strides the last 3 or 4 years against the private Federal Reserve than we made in the last 50, so the worm is turning. G. Edward Griffin.
Yeah, I agree with that. And however, we must be realistic that a lot of those co-sponsors for that bill are doing some grandstanding. They know that their constituents want them to look good. If you ask a lot of those guys, would they be in favor of abolishing the Fed? They'd say, hell no, man, I wouldn't do anything like that.
I want to add the caveat here, and I understand what you're saying. Why audit it, just abolish it? Ron Paul's being shrewd here. If they can audit, it will damage the Fed and expose their activities and their insider manipulations, that will be the beginning of the end. And so Ron Paul's using an incremental approach here. I understand a lot of it is grandstanding, but it still overall is very positive to point out it's never been audited.
Oh, I agree with that, and I do endorse this movement as for that reason. And also, it's a means of causing people to think about the Fed. They never thought about it before.
Exactly.
And now they're not only thinking about it, but in a negative light. So it's really a good move. But anyway, we must be realistic that a lot of the support is not as deep as Ron's support.
Thank you, Ken. Jason and Mass, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi, Mr. Griffin.
Hello.
Hello.
Sorry.
Yeah, you're on air.
Oh, hey. Great show, Alex. I've been listening for about a year. I've been sending out hundreds of DVDs. I love the new movie. Mr. Griffin, your books are excellent. And I wanted you to know that you've inspired me to do a comic book about the Fed. And I'd love to share that with you somehow, or maybe even get some feedback on it from you someday. That'd be amazing.
I'd love to see a comic book on the Fed. I don't think it'd be funny, but it would be probably effective.
I'm trying to put some humor in it, actually, because it's too dreadful. Alex, I just had a comment. Maybe Mr. Griffin, you could comment on this. Excuse me. I get angry when I when I hear all these dirt talkers on bothering you and getting you upset. And I've been wondering for a long time why you even acknowledge some of them. When, as you say, your fruits speak for you, and being a gentleman, you know why you need to respond to some of them when I don't think a gentleman really needs to.
We're talking about this right now. I appreciate your call. Look, there's going to be COINTELPRO that's going to attack G. Edward Griffin, myself, everybody else. It doesn't matter. The world government's here. There's no more denial. What are we going to do about it? Do you have any comments on this, G. Edward?
Well, yeah, I think his issue was, why do I waste time? I presume he's talking about our newsletter, Unfiltered News. I get some people that come in and they want to tear my arguments apart, and I often do respond. And the reason I do that is not because I expect to convince these people, but, you know, they do raise issues that I think are in the minds of others that I feel that if I don't answer them, I'm not doing my job, and I try to answer them as best I can without becoming antagonistic or angry, because I'm really writing for other people to read and not the person who's written in that dirt talk, as he calls it.
Because we know that they just throw out those lies, hoping ignorant people then think we're lying. I mean, here's an example. I noticed a campaign on the web in the last 2 weeks when I made a big deal out of Ban Ki-moon. He is the Secretary General of the UN. The UN is real. The New York Times is real. The title was, "We Can Do It." And I noticed a disinfo campaign on my comment pages and on YouTube, and I wasn't even looking for this, under different names with the same cut and paste, saying, "I went and looked at that. Ban Ki-moon didn't write that. It's a lie. He never said global government." And they're not targeting thinkers, or they're not targeting people that already know the truth. They just want the average person to read that and think I'm lying, because that's what a lot of propaganda is, just down and dirty, meant to get people off track.
Yeah, sound bites. They love sound bites. I got a real hard look at that the other day when I saw a panel on the CFR. They were in the CFR building talking about how to convince people to go get those flu shots. And they said, well, we should have sound bites. Like, for example, and then they said, tell the people that there's more mercury in a tuna sandwich than in a flu shot. Sound bite. Bingo.
And to show that the CFR is really calling a lot of the shots, or setting up the implementing the policy, that was a month ago. Now suddenly we see the tuna fish sandwich line everywhere, and they also laugh and say, we'll say there's not enough vaccine, only have it at certain spots to create a panic to put that on the news. And then they all laugh. See, it's so fun to criminally manipulate.
Yeah, so there it is, and that's why they love sound bites, because, as you said, the unthinking people will accept that as substance.
All right, we're going to let you go in just a moment. I know you're a busy man. We're going to take two quick final calls. Kevin in Wisconsin, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Thanks for having me. I just had a question and a comment. My comment is, through their systems of roundtable groups and their power structure, they're squeezing us like a cancer from the inside. Why don't we just start, as a people, just start informing their power structure and their groups to what's going on by handing out your documentaries and letting them know what's going wrong? And
then, well, that's true. There are a lot of people compartmentalized at higher levels who really don't see the big picture, and that's a lot of the whistleblowers we have. The media just ignores them. We, the alternative media, have to magnify that. G. Edward, comments on that?
Well, I think your caller has the solution. We just have to use the handout power. And, boy, we got a lot of people out there. If they're just willing to hand out 10 or 20 DVDs or CDs, we'll reach the world that way. And that's why they're so scared. And so what I'm saying is, I agree. Let's get on with it. Let's do it.
Okay, let's talk to Shanky in Georgia. Or Shanky. Go ahead, you're on the air.
Shanky. Alex Gilbert, thanks for having me. Alex, I want to thank you and Genesis and your whole team, everything, for what y'all do. Jedward, your books and work is magnificent. Really, you're right. I used to be a want to call up and disagree with you and get to the front of the line, Alex. I'm quite a conservative, but I've changed quite a bit and come to see the light, so to speak. Follow the public, and all your movies are just fantastic. I really enjoy them. As a matter of fact, I've got them at the top of my blog for everybody to see. Edward, I got a quick question, and it's on the stock market and the monetization and the open market operations and those effects, their effects on the dollar, the treasuries. What and the actual manipulation of the market to these new highs. Can you comment on that, please?
Well, there's no question that the Fed has total control over manipulation and ability to manipulate the market by manipulating credit and therefore the amount of money that's in circulation. And what we see now is that there's a lot of money going out of existence because of bad debts being written off and lowering and home values and mortgages collapsing and all that sort of thing. But at the same time, the Fed, with full cooperation of the Congress, is creating trillions of new money coming in to replace that old money that's going out. And so we see right now it's kind of a maintenance of the money supply. It's not growing nearly as fast as we might expect because there's money going out of existence at the same time. But what people are missing is the fact that the old money going out of existence is coming from the middle class. Those are the people losing value in their savings and in their assets.
But yes, it's a vertical integration, a transference of wealth because they want control. But let me ask you this quickly, the caller from Georgia, Shanky. What made you finally wake up? What the admissions of world government in the news?
It's many things. It really, I'm a financial person. I'm in the financial business, and I just it really seeing the fraud, seeing the financial fraud, seeing the manipulation of the markets. I've listened to you for years, but when you would talk about eugenics and stuff, I would just crack up. I said, you know, Alex, come on, let's get to something better than this. But now I'm starting to see it. And now the more I look into the vaccine issues and the really totally fascist state that we're becoming, we've skipped socialism in one broad step. And that realization, and I write a blog and I share some of your stuff and I share like wonderful websites like Zero Hedge and a few others that are more financially backed. But you've really brought me around and allowed me, Alex, which you probably might be most happy about, is to openly discuss this with people.
Good. We have to do that. I got to jump, but give us your blog.
Let me say one more thing.
I got to go. G. Edwards got to go right now.
All right. Shanky, just Google Shanky's blog.
Okay, thank you so much. I appreciate it. You can call back again. G. Edward, thank you for spending so much time with us, and hopefully I can come out and see you on December 12th when you're here in Austin.
I love that. Yeah.
We really do appreciate you, and God bless you.
Thanks a lot, Alex. Good luck.
There goes G. Edward Griffin. I do want to just say this now. You can get, speaking of DVDs waking people up, this really is the biggest solution. High-powered, well-produced, truthful films, they will wake people up. All the TV and media and lies and spin, that can be shattered by a single film that shows people the truth because people already subconsciously and intellectually knew the truth. They had never just consciously understood it. Alex Jones presents Reflections and Warnings, interview with Aaron Russo. While supplies last, with this printing, while supplies last of this, you can get one of these free 90-minute film with extras that are longer. You can get this film for free when you get Fall of the Republic. Fall of the Republic, regular price. Endgame for $9.95, you get this free. We have a bunch of different combo deals. It also supports us and what we're doing here. You need to support alternative media, support organizations that are telling the truth, support people that are reaching out to others. Alex Jones presents Reflections and Warnings, an interview with Aaron Russo. You can get it free with a bunch of different films I'm offering right now. And here is the new cover for Fall of the Republic. In fact, give me a document cam over the headshot because I want PrisonPlanet.tv members to be able to see this new cover. Also, anybody can go to Infowars.com, click on the banners for Fall of the Republic and see the new cover. This is the limited edition, collector's edition, second cover. This will be now the cover for a while. I may change it again. We have another volume coming out next year. But this film is the most powerful film I've made. Please get it. Give it to your friends and family. You may already know all this material, but do you have a way to present it professionally to people? This is a handsome film. The cover is. The inside is even better. Get it. Get it to everybody you know for Christmas. We're going to take a few final phone calls from Sue and Greg. Sue in Pennsylvania, Greg in Hawaii in just a moment. Then the retransmission will start on many AM and FMs across the country. Global shortwave tonight, 9 to midnight on WWCR. And, of course, the free podcast at InfoWars.com and the restreams. Tell people about the show there. That's how we're waking people up. Want to thank some of the sponsors that made today's show possible briefly. Silver Lungs. I want to tell you about SilverLungs.com. Silver, LUNGS.com. The Silver Lungs trademark generator is a highly cost-effective colloidal silver generator and lung delivery system that produces pure and endless colloidal silver and delivers the solution directly in the bloodstream. The mucous membrane of the respiratory system is the first line of defense for airborne pathogens. The Silver Lungs generator instantly arms these mucous membranes with nano-sized silver. Go to silverlungs.com and be sure to check out their complete line of colloidal silver generators and very affordable ready-made ionic silver solutions. Or check out their banner on prisonplanet.com. That's silverlungs.com. And finally, diginet.net. You need to check out diginet.net, diginet.net. You can get 10% off their DigiPens for my listeners on their website. Type in product code ETF09 in the promo box, or if you call, just mention in the Fed 09 to get 10% off on their Diginet pens, little hidden camera pens. You press, it records audio and video, very easy to use. That's why it's key with the police or government or anybody. It's just really important. Give Diginet.net a call at 888-344-6681. They've got sunglass cameras, just so many great products. 888-344-6681, Diginet.net. Okay, let's go ahead now and go to Sue in Pennsylvania, then Greg in Hawaii. Sue, you're on the air. Welcome.
Hi, Alex. I've been trying to get in touch with you for a couple of days. I wanted to let you know that I was one of the people that got arrested at Pelosi's office for ripping up the health care bill. And I just wanted to let everybody out there know that this is the last nail in the coffin for the United States. This health care bill is just a framework to plug in the massive eugenics policy against us. And we have to try. We have to fight. I'm asking people to go to their state capitals and protest at their senator's office because it's in the Senate now. They're saying that it's not going to go through, but they have the votes to let it go through. So, you know, I just say we have to give one big last push against this because it's so incredibly evil.
Well, the health care bill's going up for a vote on November 17th. That's only 5 days away. That's next. What's the 17th? Is that next Wednesday or Thursday?
I think it's Wednesday.
So, and knowing them, they could launch it tomorrow. You know, they're so deceptive and sneaky. Right. This is a group of criminals. Thank you, Sue. Greg in Hawaii, last caller, welcome.
How you doing, Alex?
Hey, buddy.
Hey, I've got a visual aid for everyone. They probably have one already. What if all the truthers, the birthers, everyone that listens to your show, all the 9-12ers, what if we all flipped our flag for freedom? Would that wake a lot of people up?
You're talking about flying the flag upside down?
Yes, sir. We're a nation under distress.
Well, a lot of people do that, and the cops come arrest them, even though it's not illegal, and it does get national attention, and then you can explain why you did it, because America's in a crisis, and I think it certainly works. But they come and fine you, fee you, arrest you, take it down. People get physically attacked because people don't know what flying the flag upside down means. And they don't care if foreign bankers rape America. All they care or the dollar's plunging and their life's going to be destroyed financially. They care about kind of petty, transitory things. But, yeah, I mean, I think it's a good idea to fly your flag upside down. We got a T-shirt that's got the flag upside down on it and explains why.
That's my message to everyone out there listening. Flip your flag for freedom. And what do you think about the situation in Hawaii? Is it going to be all right over here?
Going to be all right with what?
The martial law and stuff, or are we in the same boat?
It's all incremental martial law. When public schools are forcibly injecting kids, that's martial law. When you have troops on the street, that's martial law. When they have secret arrests, that's martial law. Thanks a lot, Greg. It's just what increment of martial law will we be under? Great job, crew. Retransmission starts now. InfoWars.com, PrisonPlanet.tv.